are on air at Danforth Racing Radio this Tuesday night, September the 6th, for our Darlington DuCoin NASCAR race review and Hot Topic Sound Off at 10. Now, we're going to start off in our first half hour talking about the latest short track news. We'll follow that up with a review of the ARCA West at Portland International Raceway, and then the ARCA Menard Series along with the Sioux Chief Showdown at the DuCoin Fairgrounds review, and we'll close this half hour out with the ARCA East update. Starting at 9 o'clock, we're going to offer some updates from the Truck Series, a very brief update on the Truck Series. They're on break still. They'll be back at Kansas. After that, we're going to review the Xfinity Series at Darlington Raceway. And before the half hour is out, we're going to start the interview, the media interview, with the number 43 winning NASCAR Cup Series team. Now, that's going to include the driver, Eric Jones, along with the crew chief, David Elins, and the competition director, Joey Cohen, from Petty GMS Racing. After that, we will close up our third half hour with the review of the NASCAR Cup Series at Darlington. At 10 o'clock, it is our Hot Topic Sound Off with the Danforth Racing crew, and we've got another full house tonight there tonight. So joining me for tonight's show is our co-host, Sal Ciala. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Oh, thank you, Sharon. Good evening.
Yes, indeed. And just on a programming note, Sal is also going to be our co-host for Thursday night show. And then next week we'll have Jay Huseman for both the Monday night show and the Thursday night show. So thank you, Sal, for filling in.
Oh, yeah, not a problem. You know, anytime I can, when I can, you know, I don't mind helping.
Right. Okay, well, we appreciate it. Okay, let's go ahead and get started with the short track news. We'll start with the information at Racing America. They have a lot of information there. There's a racetrack revival news summary, if you'd like an update of what has taken place at North Wilkesboro for the racetrack revival. You can get that summary there. They've also got a piece here about North Wilkesboro had Twitter buzzing, and I believe that doesn't surprise me, Sal.
Oh, no, it shouldn't. I mean, let's see. We're at Racing America right now. Okay, here we go, news.
Right.
Okay, how to get on there.
Yeah, North
so
Wilkesboro.
So what are you looking at?
North Wilkesboro had Twitter buzzing. That was huge to know that we were going back to racing there this year. My understanding, though, is that they're showing a lot of the tweets and photos that were put up from North Wilkesboro Speedway. And my understanding, Sal, is that when the season is over, they're going to do some renovations at North Wilkesboro. We might not see them in 2023, but they're looking to come back again in 2024.
Yeah, it was amazing how big the crowd was that was over there. You know,
it looked like it was
sold out stands.
Yeah,
it was sold out stands. It was really a pretty awesome, sight to see.
It is, and I know when we talked about the possibility of North Wilkesboro opening again, a lot of people were saying we've got to make sure the fans show up because that was part of the problem with why it closed when it closed down was that the attendance wasn't there. So you're right. It's just so good to see so many fans enjoying the racing out there at North Wilkesboro Speedway. And I know we've been talking about this a lot, but it is a big deal.
Oh, yeah, it is a big deal. You know, especially, you know, for short track racing, you know, to see, you know, a track, you know, that old, you know, that magnitude, you know, get the buzz that it got this, you know, this past week. But, yeah, it was there's a lot of pictures out there on social media if anyone wants to go out and check them out.
Yes, indeed. Also, Sawalich gets his first ARCA CRA Super Series win on the high banks of Winchester in late models. So that was good to see, along with Jimmy Renfrew Jr. gets back to the Granite State Pro Stock Victory Lane. So two big wins for those two drivers in late models.
Yes, it was. It was two big wins. You're talking about the two-star late model sports win in a row at Winchester. Yeah, Winchester's another one where they have the Winchester. I think it's the Winchester 300. It's a big super late model race, and the winner gets
Winchester
400 gets they get an actual Winchester lever action rifle. That's what the winner gets. The winner that.
Okay, and then the KDDP finalist Hayden Plyben also breaks through at Hermiston. That's the Alan Kowicki Driver Development Program. And then also there's a Labor Day weekend stat sheet that's available for folks that are looking to catch up on all of the racing that took place over the weekend.
Yeah, Hayden Plyben from up here in Washington, one of their local drivers in I think he has a couple of wins already. I don't know. They had the list up a couple of weeks ago on where the standings were so far for the Kowicki Developmental Program.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Dylan Zappa who was leading the points so far.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's really good for him. I know we had him on earlier this season. I'm going to move over to Flow Racing now, Sal. The Road to Eldora, the 2022 road ends. So a lot of these local tracks are starting to wind down their seasons now. So there's a little bit of information about that for Eldora coming up there. They've also got the Dirt Late Model Dream is 14% complete. The 2022 Dirt Late Model Dream remains to be completed with 86 laps remaining. So if you want to know more about that, that's Wednesday, tomorrow night, out at Eldora Speedway.
Yeah, it'll be exciting out there. We also get ready for our Duel in the Desert out here in I'm in Las Vegas right now. That's what I'm saying out here where I'm at. The Durham Desert will be getting ready to get fired up over here too. Last year they had over 500 entries and from what they had said last year, they're only going to allow 450 entries this year. It was just too many cars for the 4 days of racing to try and get all the racing they needed to get in. So they're going to cut it back by 450 cars, but that won't be a problem getting that many cars. And it's amazing. It's a sight to see.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. Sal, I wanted to give you an update too. And I know this is kind of a side note real quick. My brother and I are traveling out to Las Vegas Motor Speedway for the ARCA race out there at the Bullring and for the NASCAR Cup Series and Xfinity Series race that's going to be out there in the middle of October. So I wanted to mention that to you in hopes that maybe you were planning to go out there as well. We could kind of meet up.
Actually, I will be out there. I'll be out there with Chris Loudon and also with Landon Lewis, the Drive 16 for Bill McAnally Racing. And depending, there might be a couple other teams that'll be up there. So I'm only just going up for the race, and I'm driving home right after the race.
For the ARCA vacation, race?
Yeah, I'm just going for the ARCA race. My vacation time is running. I'm running out of
short.
Vacation time, so it's running short. So I got to save some time because I have other commitments that I have to hold.
Well, let's try to see if we can do a meetup out there.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. If you guys are coming out, the track is small. So yeah, it won't be a problem getting a chance to get together, because I'm sure you're probably down in the pit area too. So that'll make it that much more easier.
Okie doke. Well, again, I just want to make sure I mentioned that to you. We're going to have to move on, though, now to the ARCA Menards series. The ARCA West actually raced out at Portland, and Jake Drew once again dominated out there. He seems to be on his way toward a West Series championship.
Yeah, he does. I mean, he picked up this win this past weekend. Gosh, I mean, I'm sure by now he's got a huge, well, we'll get to the points later, but I'm sure right now he's got a, he has to have a huge points lead over whoever's in second place. It could be either Colmore or, I think, or Tanner Reif. I know that Todd Sousa had a pretty good run, too. He was up there pretty high, but.
Yeah, I think he was second.
Yeah, Todd Sousa?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was second. And actually talking to one of the guys that was watching the race, he said that Cole Moore, I guess he went a lap down and he got his lap back and charged through the field. He was already up in second and then ended up finishing fourth. So I don't know what happened.
Wow. It was a good good victory then for Jake Drew and Tanner Todd Sousa and all the guys that we're talking about here. To give you the complete rundown on the top 10, Jake Drew was the winner. He raced all 57 laps, finishing first. Todd Sousa finished second. Tanner Reif came home in third place. He's Jake Drew's teammate. Then it was Cole Moore in fourth. Takuma Koga finished in fifth place to round out the top five. The next two drivers, Ryan Philpott and Davey McGrath, finished sixth and seventh. They completed all the laps as well. Now, Joey East, Landon Lewis, and Bridget Burgess didn't quite complete all of the laps. They finished laps down, but they are in the top 10.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. The small field, 12 cars, gosh, you would think they'd have more, especially with the IndyCar, well, the road course, but not in that, but then IndyCar also ran with them with the same weekend. So
yes,
they're paired up with
the
IndyCar.
The
so, yeah, so you fear more fans or even more cars would have showed up. You know, a lot of guys just like to go out there, you know, race the same tracks, you know, as what the big boys race on.
Right, exactly. Jake Drew won at Portland the last time they were out there, but it was a rain-shortened race, so it had to be a little bit of redemption for him to finish first in this race again at Portland International Raceway when the weather was nice.
Yeah, that's right. Last time he went out there was a rain, shortened down by the rain, so.
Okay, about the only time in the race that there was a challenge, Todd Sousa got the best of Drew at the start of Saturday's race and led the first lap, but it didn't take very long for Drew to regain that spot at the front of the field. He held the lead despite a few challenges from Sousa and Moore on a series of restarts, but in reality, nobody had anything for that number 6-4 at Portland.
Yeah, he was basically the class of the field. I mean, you know, when you go back and you look at the, you know, the drivers who were racing, you know, you had one, two, three, you had four rookies out there.
Amazing.
Yeah, amazing. It was a, you know.
Well, I
can't
think
wait
Drew
to see the replay
expanded
of it.
Drew expanded his points lead. He came in 44 points over Tanner Reif, but I think it's a little more distance there, right?
Yeah, it'll be like a 52 points over.
Okay,
over,
do you want to go
over
the points report for the West?
Yeah, we could. Leading the points is Jake Drew with his four wins. Sitting at second is Tanner Reif with his two wins. He's 52 points back. Cole Moore is 55 points back. In third and 60 points back is Todd Sousa in fourth. And then from there, you go to Joey East, who rounds out the top five. And then from there, you go to Takuma Koga, sixth, Bridget Burgess, seventh, Paul Petroselli Jr. 8th, Austin Herzog 9th, and Andrew Tuttle is 10th. So Austin and Andrew each didn't compete in this event. So you only have really seven drivers that have completed all eight races this season so far.
Okay. Now, next up for the ARCA West is three more chances for Jake Drew to seal the deal on becoming the inevitable West Series champion. The series returns to action October 1st for the Napa Auto Care 150 at All-American Speedway in Roseville, California. The season then ends with a visit to the Las Vegas Speedway Bullring. That's the one we were just talking about, on October the 14th. And then the season finale will be at Phoenix Raceway on November the 4th. So a replay of this past Saturday's race, though, the ARCO Portland 112, will air on USA Network on Friday, September the 16th, starting at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time, if you want to set your DVR to watch that race. Okay, I know we're a little ahead of schedule. Go ahead, Sal.
Oh, no. Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it'll probably be a good one. It'll probably be a really good one to watch.
I think so. Also, they raced on dirt. The ARCA Menards Series, along with the Sioux Chief Showdown, raced on dirt at the DuQuoin Fairgrounds this past weekend, and it was the local favorite Ryan Unsicker that made it clear in Monday evening's Rust-Oleum Automotive Finishes 100 that he had the speed to win, and win he did, and it was a pretty special win for Unsicker, who picked up the checkered flag as a going-away present for his car owner, Bill Hendren, who's retiring from racing operations at the end of the year. I think that may mean, unless Ryan picks up another ride, that could mean it was also Ryan Unsicker's last race as well. But it was really good to see. That was
after a
couple of rain delays.
I know, it seems like all our races, no matter where they're racing, it seems like we're hitting rain delays lately. And, I know Scott got pretty frustrated there for a while, but, for Ryan to get the win, for his team owner, his car owner, what more could you ask for?
You really can't ask for anything more than that. That was pretty special. He actually started 20th because of the rain delay. The starting lineup was based on car owner points, and so they put him in 20th place. But by the time the first yellow flag flew on lap 4, he was already in third place in the ranking there. So it was a big, big day for Ryan Unsicker. I want to go over. I know that Jesse Love was hoping to win that $50,000 bonus, but he did get a $5,000 bonus for finishing second and having the best average finish between the two dirt tracks. He had a first at the Springfield Mile and then a second-place finish here at DuQuoin. So congratulations to Jesse Love. Then it was Sammy Smith in third. Daniel Dye finished fourth, Nick Sanchez fifth. The next five drivers were Greg Van Alst, Tim Monroe, Joe Cooksey, Corey Hines, and Kelly Kofsky, another local driver that came home with that top 10 finish. So pretty cool. There were only, let me look here, I got to follow the line across. I think only seven drivers actually finished on the lead lap.
Yeah, that was a very good run race. A good field of cars, 21 cars. You look up and down finishing order. You see some popular names there, Corey Hines. Coming back and racing ARCA again. Daniel Dye, of course. Sammy Smith, you know, who's been on fire in that series, you know, and then Jesse Love, you know, has been the highest finishing rookie.
Yes, he's been doing really, really very, very well. Now, we don't have the point standing, Sal, for the Sioux Chief Showdown yet. That has not yet been updated. But if you want to go over the Arkham and Art Series point standings, that would be great. I don't know why I have the hiccups.
Okay, the series is Nick Sanchez is leading. Daniel Dice in second by 11 points. Third is Roger Caruth. Fourth is Greg Van Alst. Fifth is Tony Breininger. Sixth is Amber Balkan. Seventh is Sammy Smith. Eighth is Brad Smith. Ninth is Taylor Gray. And Zachary Tinkle rounds up the top 10.
Okay. Really, it's a three-way battle at the top here. And it's been all over the place. Roger Caruth was leading at one point, but this was not a good race for Roger.
Yeah, it is a tight battle at the top. You got the top three only separated by 16 points. And then from there, they're 107 away, so they're basically out. But between Nick Sanchez, Daniel Dye, and Roger Caruth, they're going to be battling for the last of the whatever races remain in the series. They'll be battling, tooth and nail
battling
for that.
It out.
Yeah, for that for that championship.
Just so you know, the Arkham and Art Series title contender Roger Caruth, he actually had a bad day out at DuQuoin. He finished 17th after having mechanical trouble knock him out of the race on lap 18. So that's why you see Roger Caruth taking that dip after the DuQuoin race. But I don't think it's going to stay that way. These guys have been competitive all season long. And I would just encourage everybody, if you want to, excuse me, I have the hiccups, if you want to see the Sioux Chief Showdown point standings, keep an eye over at ArcaRacing.com under the standings and the menu bar and the Sioux Chief Showdown. They will update that at some point this week. And if you want to see those standings, we do have a link in the article for the recap of this week's race. The link is there if you want to have the link to that Sioux Chief Showdown point standings.
Yeah, I would definitely take it, keep an eye on it, see where your favorite driver is at these days.
Yes, indeed. Okay, now I just want to let everybody know, too, that for the ARCA East, now the Rust-Oleum Automotive finishes 100, marked round 9, the 10 races for the Sioux Chief Showdown, so in which Smith entered DuQuoin with a 23-point edge over Taylor Gray, and Taylor Gray finished in 12th because he had a mechanical issue as well. The final race of this year's Sioux Chief Showdown is going to be a race with the Arkham and Art Series and the Arkham and Art Series East combination event at Bristol Motor Speedway on September the 15th. So that's going to be a big race on September the 15th. The Arkham and Art Series season continues Saturday, September 10th, though, at Kansas Speedway. That's the 17th of 20 races for this year's schedule. That race will start at 7 p.m. Eastern and broadcast live on MAV TV Motorsports Network and will also be available via live streaming on Flow Racing. So just to update you on that, again, September 10th, they'll be at Kansas Speedway for the Arkham Menards Series. The ARCA West, their next race is at All-American Speedway, 6:45 p.m. Pacific time. That would be 9:45 Eastern. That'll be on Flow Racing. And then that race on September 15th, that is the combination event, three different point series, points for the three different series, just one race out at Bristol Motor Speedway on September the 15th. So some big racing still to come here in the Arkham Menards series.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of big racing that, you know, before, you know, they finally crowned their champion. So, you know, it's just something you want, just want to keep your eye on and, you know, follow them and, you know, and see how the season plays out. It's going to be interesting.
They also have some really great videos over at ArcaRacing.com. If you want to see the race highlights of the Rust-Oleum Automotive Finishes 100 or the behind-the-scenes at Portland International Raceway, excuse me, they also have behind-the-scenes for DuQuoin State Fairgrounds there. Jesse Love talks about his disappointment of the second-place run. He was really hoping to get, Sal, that $50,000 bonus. But he still got the $5,000 bonus, which is still good. And then they also have Ryan Unsicker's and Bill Hendren's Victory Lane interview. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, money is money. I mean, yeah, everybody wants that 50 G's, but you know, at least you got something out of it.
He sure did. And really, he has been doing very, very well this season in the Arkham Menards series, which is kind of a step up for him. He raced primarily the ARCA West and won the championship there. So now he's racing full-time in the ARCA Menards series, and I think he's doing a great job.
Yeah, he is. He's had a lot of improvements, you know, from when he, I remember watching him out here, but then he did good when he ran the ARCA West Series with Bill McAnally Racing, too.
Yeah, and let me kind of rephrase myself here. He's actually racing part-time in the ARCA Menards Series, and that's because he's not allowed to race just yet on some of the bigger tracks that ARCA races on. But he is going after that Sioux Chief Showdown title, and he's raced 10 of the 15 races of the Arkham Menards series this year. Okay. Let's go ahead and move on. I'm going to do just a real quick update for the truck series, and then we're going to get into the Xfinity series, and we're doing that because we have a great interview from the number 43 team that won in the NASCAR Cup Series, and we want to be able to play about 15 minutes of that before we get into our review of the NASCAR Cup Series. So we're going to play 15 minutes of the interview. Sal and I will talk for a little bit, and then we'll do the Cup Series review. But we're just going to kind of cut the Truck Series update a little bit close here in order to be able to do that. So let's go ahead. The next race for the Truck Series is the Kansas Speedway. That's 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Friday, September the 9th. So this coming Friday, the trucks will be back on track. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1, and radio coverage will be on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. So Sal and I are going to do a preview of that race on Thursday, so stay tuned for that on Thursday night. We'll give you a whole lot more details about what's happening in the NASCAR Truck Series. Let's go ahead and move on now to the Xfinity Series. I'm going to do that review. The NASCAR Xfinity Series raced their 40th annual Sports Clip Haircuts VFW Help a Hero 200 this Saturday at Darlington Raceway. The race winner was Noah Gregson, age 24, driving the number 9 Bass Pro Shops True Timber BRCC Chevrolet for owner Rick Hendrick and for crew chief Lucas Lambert. It was his ninth victory in 126 Xfinity Series starts, his fourth victory and 17th top 10 finish this year, and his second victory and 7th top 10 finish in 7 races at Darlington Raceway. Sheldon Creed finished second, posting his first top 10 finish in 2 races at Darlington, and it is his 10th top 10 finish this season. AJ Allmendinger finished in third. He posted his second top 10 finish in four races at Darlington. Sheldon Creed was the highest finishing rookie with that second place finish. Now, let me just real quick, as we go over that race, I'm sorry, I'm on the wrong series here. Okay, as we go over that race at Darlington Raceway, okay, again, it was Noah Gregson at the end of a thrilling three-car battle that wasn't decided until the last corner of the last lap Saturday night at Darlington Raceway. Noah Gregson stole a victory from Sheldon Creed and a charging Kyle Larson to score his fourth victory of the NASCAR Xfinity Series season. After passing Gregson for second place on lap 144 of 147, Larson got a strong run on Creed, then the leader coming to the white flag. Larson steered his number 17 Chevrolet to the inside of Creed's Camaro, and the drivers raced side-by-side through those first two corners. But it was Noah Gregson who got that win in the end. Again, be his fourth win of the season, second at Darlington, and the ninth of his career. Creed, again, was second, followed by Allmendinger, Al Gower, Kyle Larson, Ty Gibbs, Christopher Bell, Josh Berry, and John Hunter Nemechek. The pole sitter was Brandon Jones. He ended up finishing in 14th place. Creed led the race with two laps to go, but was caught by Larson coming to the white flag. They made contact with one another and slowed. Gregson was running third. He caught up with both drivers and also got into the wall before taking the lead, coming to the checkered flag. The race was red flagged for 2 hours and 37 minutes just before the end of Stage 2 because of rain. Stage 1 was won by Noah Gregson. Stage 2 was won by Justin Allgaier. There were 10 lead changes among six drivers, five cautions for 39 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 97.979 miles per hour. Your thoughts, Sal, about the race results there for the top 10?
Yeah, it was really exciting at the end between Gregson, Creed, and Allmendinger. Kyle Larson. You know,
yeah.
You really got to tip your hat to Kyle Larson. You know, he had a chance to, he could have knocked Creed sideways, got him out of his groove, but he knew what he was racing for. So Kyle, a couple times, you know, backed off the gas, you know, and let him race his race. But man,
yeah,
when Creed hit that wall on the last lap, he just went up against the wall and just figured I would ride it out. When he got the flat, and figured, you know, it's all or nothing.
Yeah,
you know,
I really thought
Creed
might pull off the win, but that duel at the end sure made it exciting.
Yeah, it did. You know, they said Noah hit the wall. He didn't hit it half as hard as Creed did, because if Noah would hit the wall as hard as Sheldon Creed hit it, he would have never finished the race. But
yep.
Sheldon Creed, man, he really put out. I really thought he was going to get this win. You know, he cut it to the points speed. You know, it makes it more exciting for him. You know, with the upcoming weeks, trying to get into the chase. You know, he really needed, you know, all that he had, and like I said, almost pulled off the win.
Almost. Now, there were some drivers from position 26 through 30th that finished laps, one or more laps down. That includes Josh Williams, Ryan Vargas, Myatt Snyder, Brandon Brown, Dawson Cram, and Brendan Poole. But then there were others that had either mechanical issues or there was the damaged vehicle policy that caused them to leave the race early. J.J. Yaley had an engine issue. Joe Graff Jr. was caught up on in an accident on lap 61, taking him out of the race. Riley Herbst, you know, did not meet the DVP, the damaged vehicle policy. He was out on lap 56. Ty Dillon had an electrical issue, taking him out of the race on lap 55. Chris Wright was caught up in an accident, taking him out of the race on lap 55. Anthony Alfredo had an accident, taking him out on lap 51. And then Tommy Joe Martins had a radiator issue that took him out on lap 44. The margin of victory in this race was 0.794 seconds. So it was pretty close.
Yeah, it was. You know, it was a, you know, it was a good race. You know, I'd like I said, you know, no, I didn't win by that much. But, you know, I mean, you know, I expected a bigger finish from out of Ty Gibbs too. You know, in the sixth. I know he was up and back, up and back, and Chris Bell too. Chris Bell was up there, and man, and that Noah just came at the end. And
I know, Sal. Let's go ahead and give the regular point standings for these guys, the top 12. And then we'll do the playoff standings.
Okay. So right now, the way it sits, it's A.J. Allmendinger in first, Ty Gibbs in second, Justin Allgaier in third, Noah Gragson in fourth, Josh Berry in fifth, Austin Hill rounds off the top six. And then from there, then we go down to Brandon Jones in seventh, Riley Herbst in eighth, Sam Mayer in ninth, Daniel Hemric in 10th, Landon Castle in 11th, Ryan Sieg in 12th, and Shelby Creed is on the outside looking in.
Okay. There's only two more races left for these guys to get into the playoffs. You've got the Kansas race on September 10th. Bristol Motor Speedway is the finale on September the 16th. And then on September the 24th, the first round of the playoffs begin for the Xfinity Series. So two more races, can you believe it? And the regular season is over.
I know, it's crazy because when you think about the Cup already, so they had their first playoff race this past weekend, also in Darlington.
Yes, they did. Okay, let's go ahead and take a look at where we are for the Xfinity Series playoff standings after Darlington, race number 24 of 33 for the Xfinity Series with two races left.
Two races left. You have Ty Gibbs up on the top spot with five wins. Noah Gragson in second with four wins. Justin Allgaier in third with three wins. A.J. Allmendinger in fourth with three wins, but so far he's a regular season championship leader. And then from there you go to Josh Berry in fifth that has two wins. Austin Hill has two wins in sixth. Brandon Jones with one win in seventh. And then from there you go to Riley Herbst, Sam Mayer, Daniel Hemric, Landon Castle, and Ryan Sieg. And 16 points below the cut line is Sheldon Creed. Other than that, Brandon Brown, Anthony Alfredo are too far out. They would need a win to get in.
Yeah, they definitely are going to need to win to get in. It's not going to surprise me, though, if Sheldon Creed pulls off a win. It seems like he's got some good mojo going. And this part of the season, he just seems to have some momentum on his side.
Yeah, he does. I mean, it's going to be, you know, interesting, you know, as, you know, if we keep moving, you know, as we keep, you know, progressing on and on and on, you know, into these last two races.
Yes, indeed. Okay, Sal, we have actually... we're at 8:10 or 9:10 right now. This interview is actually 37, just over 37 minutes. So this gives us a chance to play about 20 minutes of the interview, and then you and I can kind of talk about it for 15 minutes afterwards. Actually, I could probably play the whole interview, and then you and I can kind of give our thoughts afterwards. Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay. This is, by the way, just so you know, I want to tell you who all is on this interview. It is, you have Eric Jones, the driver of the number 43 Petty GMS Chevrolet, David Elans, the crew chief, and Joey Cohen is the competition director at Petty GMS Racing. So that's who you're going to hear on this interview. Here we go.
Good evening, everyone. We are going to begin our post-race media availabilities. We are now joined by members of our race-winning team. Congratulations, gentlemen. We have Joey Cohen, competition director at Petty GMS, as well as crew chief Dave Ellens. Congratulations. We'll go ahead and start with some questions. If you have one, please raise your hand, and we will get a mic over to you. We'll start here in the front with Matt Weaver.
Hey guys, Matt Weaver, Racing America. The question is really for both of you guys. When you guys first bring over EJ, it's the old car, so a lot of things have changed, obviously. But now with this new car, what kind of leader has Eric been in terms of directing you guys, telling you what sort of feedback y'all need to build this car and make it better to get it to the point where it's a race-winning car?
Yeah, I mean, I think Eric's done a good job giving us direction all year. You know, I don't think anybody really knew what you had to have in the car to start the season. So we definitely learned through Eric's feedback to give us a direction on how to build these cars at the intermediates, because even at the beginning of the season, we were pretty good at California, but then we kind of tapered off on all the intermediate tracks. And, you know, throughout that time, like, Eric never really got down on us. You know, he just kept giving us guidance, giving us direction to build that program better, which I feel we have.
Yeah, exactly what Dave said. You know, I think we had to spend a lot of time. You know, there's not obviously a lot of on-track time. We kind of went through the off-season and did the Charlotte test, but the rules changed so many times, so many iterations from what we had in the off-season. A lot of time with engineers, a lot of time on the simulator, kind of supplementing some of those things and just trying to, you know, let Eric lead us, right? What does Eric need in the car? Because to your point, it's totally different than any race vehicle. So a lot of credit to him. He's our senior leader. You know, he's our guy that, you know, is going to lead the engineers, lead the crew chief, lead our guys to, you know, work on the cars to what he needs.
And kind of on that note, kind of for both of you guys again, too, there's a lot of people leading this organization that expect winning in championships, right? But was there a conviction that it could happen this soon? I mean, you guys come out of the gate really fast. You guys are leading laps and running up front. But were you guys expecting to get it done this soon into this process of this new car?
For myself this season, you know, that was my expectation, to try to get a win. You know, and then throughout the season, you know, working with Joey and Mike, they definitely have embraced that quite a bit. I think that was our expectation. You know, it's hard to tell people that that's your expectation because they don't believe you. But that was definitely our internal expectation of what we're going to do this year.
Yeah, for sure. Maury Gallagher, Mike Beam, you know, those guys, they give us all the resources we need. You know, we never put a timeline on it, but it's definitely something that, like, you know, okay, what's the next phase? What's the next step we need to be more competitive? You know, I think a lot of it, you know, like I told somebody the other day, we're still hiring people. You know, we're still hiring resources. But Dave coming in with this group, the 43 group, you know, that's a very established group, very senior group. Those guys have been together a long time. The pit crew's been together. The mechanics have been together. You know, Eric, all those guys were here, and just bringing Dave in and kind of plugging him in there was a huge step forward for that program. And I agree with Dave, you know, looking at that driver, that crew chief combination, I felt like a win was surely possible this year. And I think, you know, we looked at a lot of times early in the season, you know, just a lot of things didn't line up perfectly. Talk about it all the time. You got to have a clean sheet. You know, you got to have great pit stops, a fast car. You got to execute on all levels. And you know, that's what they've been working on, right? It's 27 races here, right? But they got there, and I think, you know, not that there was any expectations that it had to happen this year, but, you know, the thing we stress is that, you know, Petty GMS and GMS race, you know, we want to win, and that's what we're here to do, and that's what Maury and Mike give us the capabilities to do.
Additional questions? Go to Jordan.
Jordan Bianchi, the Athletic. This question's for Dave. What were you thinking about as you walked down pit road and you got the high fives and selfies and everything else?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool because I've been around a while in the Cup Garage, Xfinity Garage. I have a lot of friends on different teams, and won with a lot of them, worked with a lot of them, and just to be able to walk down and see all those people, you know, person after person, congratulating me, excited for the win, knowing how hard we've worked to get that, it was really special. I think that was my favorite moment tonight, so that I enjoyed it.
Is there anything particular that jumped out, what interaction with anybody?
I mean, getting to see, you know, Greg and Randolph, they're both, I've worked alongside those guys in different roles as an engineer, you know, Xfinity crew chief, and I feel like we kind of came up together. So those guys have both had a lot of success, and just getting to see those guys and see how excited they were for me to get my first win, that was pretty special.
And then was that your wife on the phone you were talking to?
Yeah. They were actually here last night, and we watched the race and went to Victory Lane and, you know, watched Noah celebrate last night. So I was a little jealous that was in our car, so thankfully we were able to get it done tonight.
Before we start with Eric, thanks for joining us, Eric. Do you have any other questions for Dave and for Joey? We'll go to Kelly.
Kelly Crown, Racing.com. Dave, coming into this year, your first year in the Cup Series, obviously the car is new, but was that any more of an advantage for you because you didn't have to unlearn the previous Cup car, so to speak?
Yeah, definitely that was a huge advantage for me. The Xfinity cars all have flange fit panels. The rules are a little bit tighter on them. Definitely everything that NASCAR has done with this new car fit into me coming in this year. And it's provided the opportunity for me to, you know, to understand what's going on and not be, I would have been 7 years behind on what the Cup cars were because I've been out of the Cup Series for so long. I couldn't catch up to people at that point. So everybody being on a clean slate starting out definitely helped with this whole season.
And then your team, and if I can get Eric to answer this as well, for both of you, for Dave and Eric, you guys are the first non-playoff team to win the opening race of the playoff since there's been a playoff in 2004. How special is that to just steal the thunder right out of the gate?
I mean, it's definitely cool that we're the first ones to do it. But I think the first thing Eric said to me is, you know, don't you wish we won Daytona? So very special that we've done it, but definitely, you know, it's so close to being, you know, our ultimate goal. So, you know, it's special, but there's a little bit more there, too.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's awesome to win here, but at the same time, right, yeah, you do look at it like that a little bit. But, yeah, it's hard to get attention in the playoffs when you're not a playoff guy. So what better way to do it than that? But, yeah, it feels good. I mean, I feel like coming up we've got more good tracks. You know, I don't think that – I wouldn't say this is the only race that we have a shot at, you know, ending the year out. I feel like we can win more races, and sometimes all it takes is one. And, you know, I think we've gained a lot in the last year, well, 6 months of this race car and learned a lot. And, you know, the whole group's done a really good job, and it's a big testament to the people, right, when you can win a playoff race like that. There's some deflation after Daytona when you don't, you know, achieve your goal there. And we had a great car. Things just didn't work out. So I think testament to the group, right? You know, push just as hard and bring a good piece here.
Go to Lee.
Dave, you had your hands full. You know, first you come over to 43, and then you've got to, you know, pull this thing together. You look at the instant success Trackhouse had, and Mike Beam says a lot of that is we kind of started out as a truck team. They inherited a Cup team. How do you guys get to that level so, you know, Eric and knowing next year or just, you know, up at that, you know, battling for wins like Chastain and Suarez?
Yeah, I mean, definitely you look at the December time frame for the two different organizations and where we were at and, you know, what was at GMS and what was at Petty's. You know, there's not a lot there compared to a track house organization that, you know, had an active team going into it. We, I mean, I think the first day we had a meeting over there, we had like 20 people in the team meeting, and that was pretty much everybody that was there. So we've hired a lot of people since then, worked on a lot of relationships with Chevrolet, different people, trying to get more resources in-house, more tools for us to be better. And it's been good throughout the season. We're making gains on it. You know, we have higher expectations of what we're doing right now. There's plans in place to get more people, better resources. So, you know, I think we're going to grow more, you know, as this season ends up. And then next year, I think we're even going to be a step better. So I think it's just continuing to get the right people and the right resources in there.
Any other questions for Joey and Dave? Go right there. Yep, go ahead.
Hi, Alex Zetlow of the Charlotte Observer. And this is for all three of you, as I just said. Would you guys consider this a redemptive night for Eric? And I'd like to hear from all three of you, if possible.
You want me to go first?
Yeah, and Eric, you can go first.
No, I don't think it's redemptive. You know, obviously last year was a tough season for him. You know, I watched from afar last year. There was races that were good, you know, a lot that weren't great. But, you know, that's resources, that's cars that he's having to run. That's, you know, nothing to do with him. So, you know, I think he believed in himself and what he's capable of. I obviously believe in that. So I think it's a continuation of where he left off more than redemption.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, obviously I was a little in a bad spot towards the end of 2020, you know, trying to find a new home, and the 43 car became that and took me in. I knew at the start, you know, there was it was a long-term outlook for me, you know, at least. I was like, all right, you know, we got to settle in and build and figure it out. And it's not like I just came in and did that. You know, there's a lot of great people that came in and were a huge part of that to build to where we are now. But it's just been cool to be a part of, you know, coming from, you know, four carb, you know, powerhouse team like I was at to what was a single car team last year to now a two car team this year, and building into a race winning program now has been probably the most rewarding of my racing career, you know, and this is the 20th time I've said this tonight, but I'm very happy for myself to win a race, but more proud of the group. You know, a lot of guys tonight was their first cup win. Some was their first win in anything, any series. I've been fortunate to win many races in my career, and that's been awesome. And this is an awesome race to win. Don't get me wrong. I'm super happy, but just more proud of the group, you know, and what they've brought to the table and what we've built over the last year and a half.
Yeah, I mean, Eric's a foundational guy. He's not a redemptive. He's still got the prime of his career in front of him. When we went to go resign Eric, you know, earlier this year, this was a talk about a person that's got, you know, 12, 14 more years of solid racing in them, and somebody you build a program around. We're a young organization, but we're also an experienced organization. Like you said, there's a group that came with that 43, and there was a fresh young group that came out of GMS wanting to go cup racing. And like you said, we all didn't know what we didn't know, right? We just wanted to go race, and we wanted to go win. And that was going to take resources. That was going to take Maury Gallagher, Mike Beam, Dave Ellens, a lot of guys just believing in that and trying to get Eric where he belongs. You know, we're not doing anything but getting him exactly where he belongs, and that's in victory lane every single year.
Thank you very much.
I believe that there's a question in the press box for either Dave or Joey.
Motorsport.com is actually for Eric.
Okay, hey, Jim, let me let these guys go real quick.
Okay.
Dave, Joey, thank you guys so much for joining us. Don't want to hose you up.
Thank you.
James, go ahead.
Eric, there are many distinguished drivers who've had long, successful careers in NASCAR who've never won one Southern 500. You've got three career wins in the Cup Series, but two of them have come in this race. A lot of people usually talk about that this is sort of a driver's track, and it says a lot about a driver, but what does it say to you of winning twice, having this twice?
Jeez, it's like asking me to be braggadocious about this, man. I mean, you know, I just really like this track. There's tracks as a driver that you're really comfortable at, feel really good about. And Darlington's one of those places for me. Here, you know, Bristol, there's a handful of tracks in the Cup Series for me that I know going into it, if the car's, you know, close and good, you know, we can have a shot to win. And this weekend was no different. I knew we had a good car coming into it. I knew we'd made some good gains and had a shot to go and run up front. You know, I'm blessed to win this race twice. You know, like you said, there's guys that have never won this race, very successful guys, and that's such a cool trophy. I kept that one in my house for a long time. The last time I won it, just to see those faces and those names, that's pretty special for me to be on. And I've been a big fan of the history of the sport for, you know, all my life as a kid growing up and even until today. But just love this place. Love the racing here. I love this race specifically. You know, I feel like when we started coming here in the spring, I run okay in the spring race. I feel like we're always a top 10 car, but this is the race that I always have circled. From the length of it to the transition from day to night, just every bit of it I love.
We'll go to Matt.
Matt Weaver, Racing America. Kind of on the redemptive note, I know how proud you were and excited to be able to make it to the Cup Series and to be able to do it with a big team at Joe Gibbs Racing, and then it didn't play out the way that you would have wanted it to. There were good moments, but as a whole, right? When it comes down that you're not coming back there again and you're trying to put a piece together to stay here at this level, was there any sort of doubt or trepidation, fear that you couldn't get back to this level where you're winning marquee races?
You know, it's a good question. I would say I was not in desperation mode when I went to the 43 car. The outlook I had was to build. I knew last year was going to be a tough year, you know, and I think there was some really high hopes in the 43 camp that last year was going to be, you know, a magic year. And I'm like, man, I'd love to say I can plug in and just make this car win races, but it just doesn't happen like that. And coming in, I knew it was going to take time to build. I was fortunate to have been with a winning organization and have won races in Cup and know what it takes was a big help for sure in coming into, you know, RPM at the time and now Petty GMS. But, yeah, I mean, was there times when I doubted it? Probably. You know, I remember, you're not supposed to tell everybody what you're doing, but, I mean, my close friends, right, I called them and said, hey, this is what I'm doing. Signed this deal with the 43 car. And, you know, I could tell them that you can tell in your close friends' voices, right, when they're like, oh, yeah, that's good, man. I'm happy for you. And I'm sitting there on the phone, I'm like, yeah, you know, yeah. And I actually was talking to one of them the other week, and he's like, you know, I was really nervous when you first told me about this deal, and to see what you guys have done this year has really, you know, proved me wrong. And so, yeah, I mean, there's some nerves in there at times, right? And I think the big thing for me, I never doubted myself, man. I never found myself in a bad place. Sure, I was disappointed at times last year, absolutely, but never. I cannot say there was one time where I thought, man, I just can't do this.
And then what has been your role when it comes to building this new car, leading them as a team? I talked to the guys about that earlier, but, like, in terms of, like, how you decide to give them feedback, the team debriefs, I mean, what is the driver's role in developing this new car?
I think with this car, it's very obviously put a lot of parity into the sport. And it's really, you know, it takes a great team for sure. Some of it has been, I think, on the drivers to really learn about this car and the handling and the suspension. You know, I feel like when I ask for changes and want to work on the race car, I really try to know what I'm talking about and really try to know what we're doing in the race car, and Dave knows that and tries to share as much information as he can with me. But obviously my role, I guess, is trying to, you know, find the right people. You know, we're at the end of last season and knew we were making a change as far as crew chief. You know, obviously there's a few names you kind of put on the board, like, okay, these are the guys we want to go after. And Dave was the, you know, resounding guy as far as who we wanted to get. And I knew as soon as we got him signed, it was going to be a different season. You know, Dave is a sharp guy. He's got the kind of background I like. He's got the approach I like, the demeanor I like. And he was just really the guy that I was looking for in the Cup Series. He's just the kind of guy I wanted to work with. And he's been a bigger game changer than what I could ever bring to the table.
Well, good. Kelly Crown, Racer.com. Eric, two things. Joey Logano said that this, to him, the Southern 500 is the toughest, the longest and the toughest race. Obviously, the Coke 600 is pretty damn long, but he said this one is the toughest. So he said for you, you should be proud of yourself. And then when he realized this is your second one, he went, sheesh. So what does it mean to hear other drivers just give a compliment like that?
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, you know, you're always... Every person seeks respect from their peers, right? It doesn't matter what you're doing. Obviously, in racing, we seek it. Day-to-day work, you know, it doesn't matter what you're doing. So it is cool to have that respect. You know, I tried to earn the respect of my competitors as a driver and as a competitor. You know, Darlington is a tough place. Like I mentioned, though, it's just a place I felt good about. It reminds me so much of places that I just grew up racing at. You know, and it's sure it's bigger, but it takes a lot of things that I did as a young guy racing late models to be successful. It takes a lot of those same things here.
And I think you said in your television interview this was the calmest you've ever been running for a win. Why was that? What was different about this time?
I wish I knew. I'd do it every time. You know, to be honest, I hadn't been in position to win a race in a while. Number one, but I went and ran some late model races this year, grabbed a win at ORP against William Byron up there, and kind of got me back in the mindset like, all right, you know, got to get in the mindset of winning these races again. You know, I went through a year where we were not in contention to win. I went to Auto Club earlier this year with a winning car and didn't win the race, and a lot of it was just because I was rusty. I was sloppy on restarts and stuff that I know I can be better at, and I was like, man, I just gotta get back in that groove. But some of it just having been there, right? You know, and I looked back towards the other Southern 500 I won here, and that was probably harder as a driver, to be honest, because I ran out the entire last segment. We went through pit stops, you know, racing with those guys, racing with Kyle at the end for what felt like 50 laps. So I'm like, this one, I'm like, man, all I got to do is 20. You know, if I can get clear, just run 20 perfect laps, and it's all mine. And that's, I guess, why I felt so good about it.
We'll go on back to Barry.
Eric, I think you segued into what I was going to ask you about. As I've watched you this season, seeing the top fives, the top tens, at what point did you feel like that as an organization you had turned the corner and that we have a fighting chance to win?
Almost right off the bat. You know, we went to Daytona 500 and we were good, but then we went to Auto Club the second race of the season and qualified second. We had a shot at the pole. We led laps. We were up front in contention for the win. And I was like, man, yeah, this new car, like, we have a shot now. And from that point on, I was like, we can do it. You know, we can win a race, non-speedway race, this season. There's ups and downs. You know, I would say probably the past 3 months, I would have said no way we could have won this race. But the last month, you know, we've made some good stuff and good gains on this race car where we have been good enough to win these races. So, you know, I guess it's been a little bit of both, right? The start of the season, I felt good. Then we went through a lull, but then we've been back on it. And it's just... it's a good group, man. Probably the best group I've had in my career at this level as far as people, and it shows. Thank you.
All right, Amanda, we're going to hit these camera guys. We'll go in the back first, and then right here, and then in the back to Pete.
Chris Weaver with Fox 8 WGHP High Point. Have you got the 43 back in victory lane? What do you think about that, and have you talked to the King yet?
Yeah, I talked to him on the phone. Him and Dale Inman had left earlier to go home. They said it was getting too late. They needed to go and rest. They had to drive home. But, yeah, I did talk to him, and that was cool. I mean, I obviously have gotten to know the King pretty well over the last year, almost 2 years now, and I wish I could have seen him face-to-face, right, just to see his emotion, and I will. I really would love to just sit down and watch the race with him, especially the ending there, and talk about it. But it's been fun, man. I mean, with Richard, you know, he hasn't raced in almost 30 years now, but the car has changed and everything, but what doesn't really change is the mentality, right? It's the same. I mean, he's a racer. He won 200 races. This is 7 championships. I mean, he knows how to get it done. So he shared a lot of wisdom with me and has given plenty of constructive criticism, you know, which has been good. And I've enjoyed it. It's been just cool to hear from him. You know, I mean, it's cool to hear what he thinks after watching a race, what I can do better. And there's totally been things I've learned from him. You know, some people may not believe that, but there's been stuff that I've definitely learned from that guy.
We'll come right up here to the front and then in the back to Pete and the
Sal, I'm going to end it there. I'll tell you, and thank you for bearing with me with this. It's such an iconic win in that number 43 car, an iconic car for Eric Jones, who took that risk of leaving a team like Joe Gibbs Racing and going to, you know, Petty Racing at the time, and now Petty GMS Racing. And, you know, he talks a lot about his crew chief, David Ellens. What are your thoughts about the interview here? I thought it was well worth listening to.
Yeah, I mean, it was good, you know, to hear, you know, especially, you know, because, you know, we're used to listening to, you know, either Stuart Haas Racing or Joe Gibbs Racing, you know, teams, you know, that are winning a lot. You know, to hear a team, you know, that's not really – I'm not saying that they're not competitive, that they can't win, because they did prove that they could win. But, you know, to hear, you know, something, you know, different, you know, from a driver, you know, just really, you know, he's been around the block. He's been here. He's been there. He's been everywhere. You know, and then, you know, to get a win, especially at a track like Darlington, you know, it just wasn't – it wasn't a Vegas win. It wasn't an Auto Club Speedway win. It wasn't a, you know, a Phoenix win, you know, but it was a – you know, it's a Darlington win, you know, a big one, you know. The drivers really respect that track, and everybody wants to win there, you know. And, you know, to hear, you know, his excitement, you know, the everything he's gone through in his career, you know. And I'm sure there's times in any driver's career, you know, when you kind of, in a sense way, you know, step down, you know, from one of the major players, you know, to get involved with a team that hasn't won in so long, you know. I mean,
yeah, it's really amazing.
About it.
Well, the last time that the number 43 run was with Eric Almirola, and he took the car to victory lane on July 6th of 2014, and that was at Daytona. The last time the 43 and the 3 won back-to-back races was in April 18 to 25, 1999, when John Andretti won in the 43 at Martinsville. And then Dale Earnhardt won the following week in the number 3 at Talladega. So it's been so long that we've seen that 43 in victory lane. And you and I, we know Eric Jones. We talked to Eric Jones when he was racing late models and then when he came into what was then known as the Can-Am Pro Series and on into trucks and so forth. We followed Eric Jones' career path. And it's just really rewarding to see a guy who worked so hard be able to get that win in such an iconic car.
Yeah, you know, and it wasn't not putting any other driver down, but it wasn't a rain-shortened win. It wasn't a, you know, we don't have no lights win, you know, or, you know, we have to end the race, you know, because, you know, we need to get on to the next race, you know, with a legitimate win, you know, which makes it that much even more, you know, special, you know, that he can
you know, say, you know, that, you know, I beat the best of the best, you know, one of the toughest tracks on the circuit, you know, and, you know, and to, you know, when you look back at all the other drivers who have raced that car, you know, wasn't able to do, you know, so I'm just going to put out that just caused more controversy than what should have been caused, especially, you know, respecting, you know, the 43 car, you know, the way it should have been respected and the team owner.
Yes, indeed. And I know they talked a little bit about this during the interview, how, you know, they almost wish that win had come one race earlier at Daytona. But Eric said it also during the interview that he knows when he goes to a track like Darlington or Bristol, the short tracks, in other words, that he's capable of winning those races. And he certainly proved that. Two Darlington wins in his early career, I just think is fantastic.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of, you know, I can see the fans' point of view, you know, of taking, you know, a restricted plate race like Daytona or Talladega, you know, out of the mix for, you know, the last race, you know, to make the playoffs. You know, you want a legit track. You don't want, you know, just a track, you know, that, like they say,
random.
Anybody can win a restricted play race. Yeah, any random driver can win. You got to be lucky and just be there. And you know, and I mean, at a race like Darlington, isn't won by just, you know, by luck.
It's
won
a crown
by,
jewel.
You know, the team, they put a lot of work into, you know, not only to get out there, but, you know, to win the race, you know, so. You know, it's not like a crapshoot, you know, or when you give them a fast car, you know what, and, you know, just don't wreck. Stay out of the big one, and you know what, and you got just as good a chance of winning. This race isn't that type of a race.
Did you ever think, Sal, at the beginning of this season that we'd have 17 different winners at this point?
No, I never thought that.
17 different winners in the Cup Series this
yeah.
year. Through 27 races. So that's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is amazing. It's been an amazing season. So, I mean,
it has.
You know, and there's still more races to come.
There certainly is. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the review of this race at Darlington Raceway, the 73rd annual Cookout Southern 500, with the winner Eric Jones at the age of 26, driving the iconic number 43 Focus Factor Chevrolet for team owner Richard Petty and crew chief David Ellens. It was his third victory in 210 Cup Series races, two of those victories at Darlington, his first victory and 10th top 10 finish in 2022, his second victory and 7th top 10 finish in 10 races at Darlington Raceway. Denny Hamlin finished second. He posted his 16th top 10 finish in 21 races at Darlington and his 8th top 10 finish this season. Tyler Reddick finished third, posting his third top 10 finish in 7 races at Darlington Raceway. Austin Cindric, he was the highest finishing rookie. He finished in 16th place. Now, Eric Jones, again, held off Denny Hamlin to fill that action-filled Southern 500. Elliott spun sideways in turn 2 on lap 113, 2 laps short of the end of the first stage. He cracked the back of his number 9 Chevrolet and slid down the track into the path of Chase Briscoe, who couldn't avoid the collision. Elliott nursed his car to pit road, where his team tried in vain to repair the damage, but with the right rear toe link and upper and lower control arms broken, the task was hopeless. The 10-minute time allotment under NASCAR's damaged vehicle policy ran out, and Elliott retired from the race, finishing in 36th place. This is the regular season champion. After the first race of the playoffs, he's lost all of his advantage, Sal. It's so disappointing for Chase Elliott. Eric Jones, on the other hand, got his first win of the year and the second at Darlington, the third of his career. Hamlin finished second, followed by Tyler Reddick, who is the pole winner, Joey Logano, Christopher Bell, Michael McDowell, Brad Keselowski, William Byron, Bubba Wallace, and Alex Bowman round out the top 10. Jones took the lead with 22 laps left when the race leader Kyle Busch fell out of the race with a blown engine. Several playoff drivers had issues during the race. We already mentioned Chase Elliott, the regular season champion and points leader, entering the race, lost control of his car just before the end of stage one and backing into the outside wall. The team was not able to repair the damages, and he was unable to continue, finishing 36th. Harvick fell out of the race with 90 laps left when his car caught fire on the rocker panel area. He finished 33rd. And while leading the race with less than 25 laps remaining, Kyle Busch lost his engine. He finished 30th. Chase Briscoe was caught up with the Elliott accident and lost three laps, finishing 27th. Larson lost three laps early with an engine issue and went four laps down before climbing back onto the lead lap at the end of stage two. He ended up finishing in 12th place. Stage one was won by William Byron. Stage two was won by Kyle Busch. There were 21 lead changes among 11 drivers, 9 cautions for 58 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 120.406 miles per hour. Your thoughts about those finishers?
Yeah, like you said, you know, once again, you know, congrats to Eric Jones, you know. I know Denny Hamlin was trying to make a run at him towards the end. I thought maybe Tyler Reddick might have even had a shot at him, but Eric just, you know.
He was able to hold him off.
Yeah, he was able to hold all of them off, you know. You know, when, you know, like you said, you know, you mentioned, you know, all the playoff drivers, you know, Chase Elliott finishing dead last, Kevin Harvick 33rd, and Chase Briscoe, you know, finishing 27th. You know, that's not how you want to start the first race of the chase. I think Joey Logano and Danny Hamlin look after the first race to be, you know, the favorites, but Danny Hamlin will do something, shoot himself in the foot, so he won't do it. But Joey Logano being a past champion and being the driver that Joey Logano is, you know, you almost have to. I know there's still a lot. We still got more racing that, but Joey knows how to. Joey's a past champion. He knows how to get it done. I just think Danny's going to shoot himself in the foot once again, and he's gonna be Dan Marino that's gonna go down in history. As Dan Marino is one of the greatest quarterbacks in football and never won a Super Bowl. And I think Danny Hamlin's gonna go down as one of not one of the greatest, but one, you know, one of the top stars in NASCAR, and not win a championship. Yeah.
Yep.
He's won big races. He's won big races, just like Dale Jr. won big races, you know, won the Daytona 500 a couple times, you know, but could never get a Cup Series championship, you know, and retired, you know, and left it at that.
Okay. Well, there were several drivers who finished a lap or more down, starting with Justin Haley in 19th place, Ross Chastain, Harrison Burton, Ty Dillon. They all finished one lap down. Then there was Daniel Hemric going, and Corey LaJoie, along with Landon Castle, Chase, Chris Buescher. They finished two laps down. And then it starts getting a little bit more. You've got Chase Briscoe, Todd Gilliland, B.J. McLeod, all finishing laps down. We mentioned Kyle Busch had the engine failure. Martin Truex Jr., went out on lap 336 with a water pump issue. Cody Ware had an accident on lap 331 that took him out. Kevin Harvick had a major fire and exhaust problem on lap 274, taking him out. He finished 33rd. J.J. Yaley had an exhaust issue, taking him out on lap 236. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. taken out by an accident on lap 164, and we mentioned Chase Elliott going out early on lap 113 to finish 36th. The margin of victory here was close. It was 0.252 seconds for the margin of victory. Any additional thoughts there?
No, just, you know, it was, you know, you look down, you know. Yeah, Eric Jones, and, you know, then next thing you know, then you go down to, you know, the next four drivers were all chase drivers, you know. So, you know, still, you know, you had seven chase drivers, you know, in the top ten, so.
Chase drivers were pretty much strewn throughout the entire field.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go ahead and talk about the points here.
Okay, the points are... Joey Logano in first. William Byron second. Danny Hamlin in third. Christopher Bell in fourth. Tyler Reddick in sixth. Ryan Blaney in sixth, Kyle Larson seventh, Ross Chastain in eighth. That rounds out the top eight. And then the next eight down is going to be Chase Elliott, Alex Bowman, Kyle Busch, Daniel Suarez, Austin Cindric, Austin Dillon, Chase Briscoe, and Kevin Harvick. As we know, those aren't actually the way the point standings are. The actual point standings are, I'll just add it up here right now. Here it is. The actual point standing is Joey Logano leading the points, William Byron in second, Denny Hamlin in third, Tyler Reddick and Christopher Bell in fourth, Tyler Reddick in fifth, Ryan Blaney in sixth, Kyle Larson in seventh, Ross Chastain eighth, Chase Elliott ninth, thanks to all those playoff points that he racked up. Alex Bowman in 10th, Kyle Busch 11th, and Daniel Suarez sitting in 12th. And then in the cutoff so far, you got Austin Cindric, who's two behind Daniel Suarez. Austin Dillon, who's four behind Daniel Suarez. Chase Briscoe, who's 10, and Kevin Harvick is at the bottom of the heap at 13 points behind Daniel Suarez for that last spot for the next round.
Okay. I was just trying to see how that compares. It's pretty close to the same. Christopher Bell, Tyler, Ryan Blaney. That's exactly the same, Sal.
As the regular season?
Yeah. Yeah, the points, I was trying to figure out where it was different. And when I compare them side by side, they're exactly the same. So anyway, yeah. Okay, so just I don't know if you knew that or not. Okay.
No, I didn't. I just noticed that now.
Okay. Okay. So. Anyway, what did I do here? Okay, so we have a really amazing battle going on here between these drivers and a shakeup when you consider Chase Elliott was first. He's now in ninth place. And Kevin Harvick, who had kind of raced his way into the playoffs, is now the last driver on that cut line. So the cut line is 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th. Kevin Harvick is 16th. So Austin Cindric, Austin Dillon, Chase Briscoe, and Kevin Harvick are all below the cut line. And then with those two races that are still left in this playoff, there's a lot that can happen. We may have some surprises in this.
Oh yeah, there's a lot that can happen. The only thing that held Chase Elliott from probably dropping down to where Kevin Harvick is the
fact that he had those 40 playoff points coming in. You know, because
exactly.
Other than that, he would have been.
But it seems like all of that's taken away now. All of the advantage that he had is now gone with such a bad finish at, you know, with the fact that he finished dead last at Darlington. Then up next, we have Kansas Speedway on September the 11th, and then Bristol Motor Speedway is the elimination race. And that's another one of those races where a lot can happen. So I think we might be in for some surprises.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure we will. I mean, a lot can happen, especially with the tracks, you know, that are left. You know, it's going to be exciting to see what happens. You know, Kevin Harvick can easily pick up another win, you know, punch himself into the next round, you know, really be a heartbreaker. You know, Austin Dillon, I think he got his lucky win for the season. I don't think he's good for another one. Kyle Busch can still win a race. I mean, he's got a lot of drivers that can still win out here.
That's true.
You know, especially
when you consider it's Kansas. Kansas is that 1.5-mile track where a lot of the drivers are good on those tracks and can probably pick up a win. But only one of them is going to actually do it. And then you've got Bristol Motor Speedway, and then there's those drivers that are really good on those short tracks.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what happens when Kurt Busch comes back.
Yes, it is going to be interesting to see what happens when he comes back. Sal, were you at a racetrack this past weekend? No, you were on vacation this weekend.
Yeah, I'm still on vacation work. I'm on
vacation
but I'm at work.
Okay,
yeah, well,
I got
vacation's
you.
Over. Now I'm working. Yeah, I'm out here in Las Vegas. We had a we came up early and spent some time up here. And then now we're now I have 2 days of work and then back home.
I got you. Okay, so again, I can't wait to get out to Las Vegas in the middle of October, and the only chance I'll have to see you there is at that ARCA race. So I'll definitely. Make it a point.
Oh yeah, it'll be a fun time. I'll tell you that.
Yep. Can you believe in all of this time you and I have never? In all of this time, Sal, how long have we known each other? Seems like forever.
Yeah, it's just a long time.
It is.
Very long time.
So
yeah.
So I think that's going to be fun. Okay, so with that, Sal, in fact, we'll look forward to catching up with you. I know you're going to do the show again on Thursday night with us this week, and then you're off all week next week, and Jay's going to co-host both of the shows next week. So I'm looking forward to working with you again on Thursday night.
Yeah, we got a night job coming up next Monday, so...
Okay.
It's going to be interesting.
Well, Jay is on vacation this week, and then he's coming back over the weekend. So he was saying that would help him out a great deal, and he'll be able to do the show then on Monday and then again on Thursday next week. So it's the Sal Sagala week this week and the Jay Huseman week next week.
There you go.
Okay. Well, thanks, Sal. We really appreciate you, and we're definitely looking forward to the preview show on Thursday night starting at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Fan for Racing Radio.
All right. Good night, everybody. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you on Thursday. Okay. Goodbye.
Okay. Good night, Sal. All right. And with that, we are ready for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off here on Fan for Racing Radio. And joining us, I know we have Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Well, thank you, Sharon. I think Sal's already gone. I was going to thank him for picking up there on Thursday, and I'll cover for him, like you said, next week. I kind of had to laugh, though, when you said on vacation. I don't know if working a county fair is vacation. I got a couple days, and then I'm going to a dirt track in Kentucky. But so
okay.
Vacation,
I'm sorry.
In between jobs, if you will.
Okay, sorry about that. I'll have to correct that on Thursday night. Will you be able to do Hot Topics on Thursday?
I don't know yet because I don't know how late I'll be at the track. I'm going out for practice night at the track.
Okay, well, keep us posted. Also joining us for tonight is Michael Orzel. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Hey, real quick, I want to apologize to everybody. I did not try and do like a mic drop or anything last week. I legitimately did about the dumbest thing I've done on this radio show. I went to hit the mute button, and I hit the hang-up button. So tonight, my goal is to be a little bit more deliberate with my thumb.
Oh, okay. Well, we appreciate that, Mike. And then also joining us tonight is Tommy Kraft. Welcome to the show, Tommy.
Hey, how are y'all? Thanks for having me back on.
Well, it's good to have you back on. And we've got a full house here again tonight, so that's always a good thing. Now, Jay, just one real quick note to you. I'm hoping before we close out the show tonight that you will be able to give us an update on the fantasy group.
All right. Well, I just loaded up the cup race there, so I got them all ready whenever we get a chance. Make some people happy and maybe some not so much. Another wild weekend for sure in the points there.
Yes, and when you're talking double points, it really can add up very quickly. And that would be just in the Cup Series for right now.
Can you hear Mike smiling? He's making a little bit of a late season charge.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he's a happy camper. Okay, let's go ahead and start with our NASCAR Hot Topic sound off for tonight. And Mike, I let Tommy go first last week, so let's have you go first this week.
Sure. Big news coming out of the race on Sunday was the fire on Kevin Harvick's car. With a little bit less than 100 laps to go, the number four car of Kevin Harvick caught fire, and he didn't even make it back to pit road. He had to bail out of the car midway around the racetrack. And previous fires that we've seen on Chris Buescher and Cole Custer's car have been somewhat attributed to contact, but the really concerning thing with the number four car was that there was no apparent contact or a tire failure or anything with Kevin Harvick's car. And they've addressed it this week. And just this afternoon, NASCAR has come out with a new piece to block off part of the rocker panel to hopefully address these fire issues.
Okay. Tommy, your thoughts about the incident with Kevin Harvick, and he was not a happy camper either.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mostly saw what he said after the fire, which was not a very nice interview. Basically said that it was crappy equipment and that whoever was running the show or that they needed somebody that knows how to run the show, I think, or something along those lines of what he said. So, pretty brutal comments, which anytime they interview these guys after a crash or during a race like that, which is a long one, the Darlington race is about like the Coca-Cola 600. It's a long race. So, of course, he's going to be fired up and he's going to say things that he probably shouldn't have said. But, it's Harvick. He's about like Kyle Busch. He's going to say what he's going to say, whether people don't agree with it or not. I mean, he even said that the sport could have been bigger if Junior would have been better. So, I mean, Harvick's bold. He's just going to come out and he's just going to say it. I thought it was pretty brutal for him to say that they needed somebody that knows how to run the show. But, I mean, you don't want to say things like that because it doesn't make you look good. But at the same time, you also almost want to say that he does kind of have a point. Like, if things are reoccurring and there's problems that are just keep on going and going and going, they need to look into it. They need to address it. But, I think somebody put the stats on Twitter about the fires and the parts having fires this year. And Harvick was saying it was a piece of crap equipment and that had they had different equipment and things that they had been suggesting for the car, that maybe that wouldn't have happened. But I think that was literally the only fire this year from that part y'all are talking about. So, I mean, he's just unhappy, and doing what Harvick does. I mean, I like Harvick. You know, he's one of the veterans of the sport now with Kurt Busch. I don't want to see him retire because, you know, he's been racing like 20 years, but got to be careful with what you say. But like I said, also, I like Harvick, and I'm perfectly fine with him ranting as well.
Okay. Jay, your thoughts.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I know we kind of had this discussion already last week with some things. I don't know that there's a parts issue from what I heard, and I want to say this. Over the weekend, being busy, I didn't get to watch any of the races. I listened to them on the radio and talked to a bunch of people, so that's all I got, and then listening to SiriusXM radio. That, yes, there is a concern as far as the fires, which is obviously a safety issue, and NASCAR does want to address, but it's not in the parts itself. It is, I know they were putting it on the sidewall foam, I guess, is where they thought the problem was. That is not the part that's on, right. That, okay, that's not the part that's on fire. It is that the rubber buildup, especially on tracks where there's big tire wear, such as Darlington, all that rubber is getting built up in there, which does burn. And that's what gets in there and is what is burning. From, and this is going by from what I've heard through the radio shows that I've listened to. So as Mike said, that NASCAR's plan is to put a piece in that's going to block that and prevent that rubber or anything from getting in there where it can catch fire. Obviously, there is a concern with it. We have seen a couple throughout the year. Primarily, from what I heard, it was with the Fords. Why that is, I don't know, and nobody seems to. But there is a concern, and it needs to be addressed. I still don't know that they're going about it the right way. In this case, this week, Kevin Harvick, very vocal, as Tommy talked about. I appreciate him expressing his opinion and trying to get attention drawn to it. I'm not sure it was in the right manner. Now, you have to kind of excuse it, as Tommy mentioned. He ended up having to bail out of the car in the race and did not have a good finish and affects his championship run. And they interviewed him, you know, have a camera and a mic in his face right afterwards. Yeah, the way he says things, probably going to be a little more poignant than had he had a day or so to then come forward and talk about it and say he has a genuine safety concern. So kind of got to give him a pass, but also he's been doing this, again, Tommy said, for a long time. He knows what he's doing, and he wants to do it his way.
Yep, that is so true. And you know, Kevin, I just wish they wouldn't do it so publicly and so negative on NASCAR, because it's not – NASCAR is trying to do everything they can do in order to address some of these issues. And to – I forget who said it now. This is the first time this particular – failure has happened in a car. I was listening to Corey LaJoy, who was on with Danielle Trotta earlier today on SiriusXM Radio, and he brought up a really good point, I thought, and something that kind of puts it into perspective. And he's just saying, let's see, there are 36 or 37 cars at a time on the track, times the 26 races for the year, and that comes to about 936 to 973 Cup Series next-gen cars on the track per year. Now, counting on two hands with maybe a couple of extra fingers, and those are his words, incidents involving spec parts this year comes to around 1%. So LaJoy feels the media has been overly critical of what NASCAR has accomplished with the next-gen car this year. Obviously, he agrees with all of us that safety is the priority and that cars on fire are never a good thing. But his point is that NASCAR is on top of it and doing everything possible to fix the issues, which some have already been resolved. And this issue with Harvick, by the way, it sounds like they've come up with a solution already for that. And again, just keeping in mind that that's Corey LaJoy's point of view, and I was just sharing it on our Teams app. But I think he makes a really good point. I think it's real easy when you have one or two very vocal drivers, and that it can be taken out of perspective sometimes of what's happening. And when you consider that it's 1%, I have to agree with Corey LaJoy, that's pretty darn good for the first year of this next gen car. It's an ongoing process. They knew that coming into the season that it was going to be an ongoing process and that things were not going to be perfect, but that they were going to try to do everything they can to resolve any issues that come up. And I think they've done a pretty good job of being on top of those kinds of things. Now, if I was Harvick and I was in that car and it was burning the way it was and I had to jump out of it, and then give an interview almost, not immediately, but almost immediately after that, I'd be pretty, quote-unquote, hot as well. So pun intended there. And I know, Mike, you had a similar pun earlier. I think he has every reason to be upset. I just wish he wouldn't degrade NASCAR when he expresses his displeasure, and it makes the sport look bad. It makes the whole organization look bad, and I have to agree with Tommy. It makes him look bad, and that's what a lot of people don't realize when they fly off the handle that way, is that sometimes it makes them look as bad as what it is they're criticizing. So I think that as professional race car drivers, maybe as a media people, maybe we don't jump on somebody that quickly after they get out of a hot burning car and ask for an interview. Maybe we need to give a little cooling off time before we jump in and ask those kinds of questions. But he has every right to be upset. I get that part of it. But I do think that NASCAR was very responsive in getting this taken care of. And I think they've been pretty responsive all season long in addressing the issues as they come up. So, Mike, I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
All right, so this is going to be probably the most political answer that I could give here. And I'm going to say that everyone has really good points here, including Kevin Harvick. And Kevin Harvick is an old school racer. He's been racing in NASCAR for over 20 years now in the Cup Series, and obviously he had an upbringing in racing long, long before he got into the NASCAR Cup Series. And over the course of Kevin Harvick's career, he has seen less and less and less control in the hands of the teams in terms of the cars they build, the equipment they use, et cetera, as NASCAR has specified a much tighter tolerance on materials that are used, equipment that is used, and now the car itself. And I think there's probably a little bit of frustration on his part there because, at least from one standpoint, when you're the one building the car, you're the one preparing the car, you're the one who's responsible for that car. And if it was a Stuart Haas Racing-built car that failed him, he's really got no one to point the finger except at his own race shop. But he's frustrated because the car that was provided to him did not work as advertised. Their advertised did not catch on fire, you would assume, and it kind of let him down. And I can see how he's frustrated about that. From a technical standpoint, Roddy Childers actually put out a video on Instagram yesterday kind of highlighting the problem. And it seems like it's not just a burning rubber issue. Roddy kind of highlights that the insulation that's used in some spots in this car, including around the rocker box that caught fire on Kevin's car, is not necessarily fire retardant. To demonstrate this, Roddy took a piece of what he called good insulation. He didn't say what it was, whether it was a part from a Gen 6 car or what, but he put a clump of rubber on it and put a blowtorch to the rubber. And the rubber itself burned there, but that's it. It didn't spread to the insulation. He even went so far as to put the blowtorch on the insulation itself, and that never caught fire. It seems like the problem with the Gen 7 car that hopefully they're addressing with this change starting this weekend is, yes, rubber does burn. Yes, rubber does catch fire from time to time. The problem is the fire going uncontrolled and spreading into places that shouldn't catch on fire, namely the insulation in the car, the body of the car, stuff like that. So I applaud NASCAR for coming up with hopefully a solution to the problem that the four car had this past weekend, but hopefully they can readdress it maybe in the off season and replace some of these materials that aren't as fire retardant as maybe they should be with a different material that won't allow a fire to spread versus just trying. It looks like the the fix NASCAR has right now is an attempt to keep the fire contained into the spot where it's relatively safe as far as fires in a race car go. And I think the next step to a more permanent solution for this would be addressing some of the materials in that car that are capable of catching fire when they are exposed to a different kind of fire. So if, you know, oil leaks out of the engine and catches on fire, that fire from the oil doesn't spread to some other part of the car. So hopefully NASCAR is able to address that in a more permanent manner this week or this off season and make these cars just a little bit more safe from a fire retardant standpoint.
Okay, Tommy, your follow up.
Yeah, you know, NASCAR will definitely take the off season to work on some of these problems that the drivers have been griping about. Of course, with the safety concerns, you want them to act quickly, but, you know, there's only, like, what, 2 months left now, November, September, October, November, yes. They'll have December and January to make the adjustments, because I'm sure they're already working on them now. But, yeah, you know, like I said, the interview with Harvick, you kind of like the reporters going up to him right after the fact, because even though it wasn't the best interview, like, he's probably looking back on it saying, maybe I shouldn't have said that. But, you know, at the same time, it's Harvick. He's probably not thinking that. But it doesn't look the best, like I'm saying. Like, it makes him look sassy and hateable like Kyle Busch. But at the same time, it's good entertainment for him to, you know, say those things. So you get a good laugh out of it and stuff, but you would think at some point, I mean, like him saying we need somebody to run the show better, I mean, that's a hot take. And if I was an executive at NASCAR, I wouldn't be too happy about him saying that, and I would probably say something. But if that's what Harvick's got to say to get their attention on this particular matter, then, you know, I get it. But I like the idea of letting them maybe cool off and then doing the interview. But either way, I mean, we've seen it before where they've gone to the care center and been out of the care center. So, I mean, it's been 10, 15 minutes after the crash, and they still got hot takes to say. So, I mean, they're still going to be hot. So, either way, just let them, I guess, do the interview, and we'll just talk about the drama like we're doing now.
Okay, Jay.
Well, I think it's odd that Tommy would compare him to Kyle Busch, you know, because sometimes teammates act alike. Oh, wait, they're not teammates yet. We don't know that. Sorry. Different topic. We'll see what happens there. The issue there obviously has been addressed. There's a couple other that linger as part of this. I know talking about whether or not the media should talk to him, and that's on the drivers then on how they handle themselves. The media's job is to interview them, and I heard this discussion on SiriusXM Speedway with Dave Moody. Their job is to try and talk to them. If they decline interviews, so be it. If they go on a rant, so be it. You know, if they give short one-word answers, such as Kyle Busch tends to, that's their choice. And like we said, Kevin Harvick knows what he's doing. He's been doing this for a long time. The one thing I think that clearly it shows that what Kevin Harvick is saying isn't true is between the end of the race on Sunday and today, NASCAR did not come up with this plan. This has obviously been in the works, and they were ready to bring it forward. You didn't hear a whole lot of them about it up until now. I understand that. And Dave Moody kind of made that point that maybe NASCAR should have been at least replying to some of these calls. But they had a plan ready. It did not happen over the last day and a half. This has been being worked on. It takes time. So that counters what Kevin Harvick's saying, is that they don't care and aren't doing anything about it. It's they're working on it in silence, if you will, and when they're prepared and ready to make the change, they do so. So I think that kind of counters, like you said, what Harvick's saying, and makes him look as the bad one on the deal of that they don't care. Now, can they improve or whatever? And if drivers and teams and owners and all of them work together, most definitely. And Sharon, I know you're one that's a big component of this. That's how it needs to be done.
Yeah. I, you know, working with NASCAR And I hope Rodney Childers isn't just putting the video out on Twitter and expecting NASCAR to respond to it. He needs to be taking that information directly to NASCAR and showing NASCAR that that's what he's discovered so that they can do something about it. And again, then NASCAR has to turn around and go and work with the vendors to make sure that the vendors can make the changes that they're looking at as well. And how soon can they make the changes? And they said that this change that they just implemented with the rocker panel is something that they can put into place. Let's see, a piece will be added to the rocker boxes for this weekend. The piece will be available from the supplier in the morning so that teams can install it tomorrow. Also, what's his name? Scott Miller was on SiriusXM, the morning drive this morning, and I posted his interview here on our Teams app, but it's also available on Twitter. It's also available and was posted by SiriusXM NASCAR Radio, if anybody wants to listen to that. And he said it is a process that these things have to go through, and they are continuously working on all of these issues that are coming up. It may not be going as fast as we want it to go, but it doesn't mean that they're not working on it behind the scenes and with the vendors and the suppliers and the people that they work with. All of that has to be coordinated, and it takes time to have those conversations and to make those things happen. So I think Jay makes a good point. For them to come up with that solution as quickly as they did may mean that they were kind of on the road to that as a solution anyway. And I know that this seems like it might be a little bit different, but I think rubber has played the rubber on the road, the marbles is what we call it, that get up into the car. I think that has been an issue for some of these other fires that are going on too. Maybe not even with the rocker panel, maybe with the rocker panel, but for other areas of the car as well. So, I do applaud NASCAR for being on top of it. I have no doubt whatsoever that safety is a priority with NASCAR, and they want to do everything they possibly can do to make the drivers safe in that car. That's not even a question in my mind. So if there are parts and pieces that can be improved upon, I think they're open to doing that, and I think they've shown that. So for Harvick to say some of the things that he said, just like I said before and what Tommy has been saying, it does reflect poorly on the sport and on himself to say some of those things. Does he have a point? He probably has a really good point, but the point's getting lost in the rhetoric in the manner in which he puts it out there. And I don't know if it's totally been lost, but a lot of people just kind of roll their eyes and say, there's Harvick going off the handle again. So he might find a different way that might be more advantageous to himself and to the sport for making those points in a way that doesn't reflect so poorly on the sport, the people who are running the sport, and himself. So just some thoughts there. Mike?
So this might come as a surprise, but I'm going to kind of disagree with you a little bit about I don't think Harvick really has much of a responsibility in terms of putting the sport in the best light possible. He's going to say what he's going to say. And his take, it kind of goes along with what he said around the Daytona race, where his frustration is he feels like NASCAR is not moving quick enough or not they're not willing to spend the time, money, or resources it takes to make the changes. Now, with that said, and obviously NASCAR had something in the works here that they were able to quickly implement to fix the rocker box failure. That's great news. What it kind of alludes to, though, is there may be a breakdown in communication between NASCAR and their R&D department who are working on these fixes and the teams themselves. So if NASCAR is concerned about some of the comments the drivers make that may put them in a bad light, they might need to address their communication process between the NASCAR R&D department and the teams to say, hey, we've got this change coming. We're working on this solution right now. It's not quite ready yet, but we want you to know we're on it, as opposed to leaving drivers in the position like Kevin Harvick seemed to have been in, where he has seen or heard no action coming on the situation, and he was just in a situation that could have been very dangerous to him. So I could see how he would be concerned about that, and an improved communication process between the people at NASCAR who are developing these solutions and the teams who are expected to implement them, and then the drivers who are expected to put their safety in the hands of this equipment. I think that process can be improved, and it might break down some of these issues where, whether it's a miscommunication or a bad take from the driver, however you want to look at it, I think it could help remedy that situation.
Okay. Well, I agree with you as it relates to the communication. I think that's a really good point. I 100% disagree that Kevin Harvick has no obligation to represent this sport. He is this sport, and he does have an obligation to represent this sport in a positive light. It doesn't make sense for somebody who is a part of a sport to disparage that sport publicly and to think that that's going to be okay, because it's just not. So I disagree with that point, but your point about the communication, Mike, I think is right on. Okay, Tommy, you get to take us to the next hot topic.
Well, I'm sure y'all have talked about this one a couple times, but I haven't gotten a chance to yet. Let's go with where is Kyle Busch going to go, RCR, 23XI, or Calling?
Okie doke. Jay?
Sharon, you want to look at the time there real quick and do that first?
Oh, okay. Yeah, let me go ahead and do that. I was looking for this topic on here. We are at that point of the show that I do an announcement for all of our first-time listeners because we don't want you to be caught off guard or not really understand what's going on. We're going to be going off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time, but we are going to continue our conversation, and we will record that part of our conversation as part of our bonus overtime material. And that will be available on our podcast. Now, what I do is when we're completed our conversation here tonight, I'll go out on Twitter as well as Facebook and let everyone know that the podcast is now available. And we have the player there at BamperRacing.com. All you have to do is go to the player and fast forward to the two-hour mark in order to hear the rest of the conversation, that bonus overtime material that you can't hear on the live broadcast. So, again, we didn't want anyone to be caught off guard and not know where they can hear the rest of the conversation or how that works, and that's why we do that announcement at this time of the show. So, with that, Jay, go ahead with your response.
Well, I know I joked about this with the Kevin Harvick deal when Tommy mentioned that. It's still an unknown to us. Several sources have indicated that a deal is probably, if not inked, agreed upon. The way Kyle has been the last couple weeks with answering the question appears that he knows what he's going to do. It just isn't public yet. For the public, we're still kind of guessing. And unfortunately, I'm going to have to, I think, share some of Mike's crow, because I said I really thought he was going to be back at Joe Gibbs Racing. It does not appear to be going down that road, as there's a lot more talk about Chevy with Colleg Racing and Richard Childress Racing. I know that the Ford team of Stuart Haas Racing has come up a couple of times, and Kyle has said he has had talks with these teams. I know Colleg Racing announced that they are ready to make an announcement. We don't know what that is, and I can't remember what the date on that is, but it really seems like it's leaning towards Richard Childress Racing, which I find kind of odd. And then you got several other things that come into play of, does Tyler Reddick move next year, even though he was under contract? So there's a lot of things still going on behind the scenes that we don't know yet. It's going to be interesting because, like I said, I really thought he would return to Joe Gibbs Racing. I'm losing the, I don't want to say faith, but belief in that anyway, like I had to begin with. It's not looking good from what I can tell. Now, again, that might be totally different. We don't know yet.
Okay, Mike.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. What was it, a month, maybe 6 weeks ago? I was standing there stomping my foot on the ground saying, for sure, Kyle Busch isn't leaving Joe Gibbs Racing. No way, no how, no sir. And here I am bellying up to a plate full of crow with Jay, apparently, because it sounds like Joe Gibbs Racing isn't even in the discussion anymore. It sounds like it's a done deal, foregone conclusion. No matter what, Kyle Busch is not coming back to Joe Gibbs Racing next year. The interesting thing, though, is that 2311 is still in the discussion. I think a lot of us, at least myself, we kind of assume that if Kyle leaves Joe Gibbs Racing, that means he's leaving Toyota. Yes, 2311 is an independent team, but Toyota, they've got a pretty small tent, and they're all 2311 and Joe Gibbs Racing are very closely affiliated, not just with Denny Hamlin on the ownership side, but there's a lot of information sharing, part sharing, et cetera. And of course, they all fall under the TRD Toyota umbrella. So the assumption was that if Kyle were to leave Joe Gibbs Racing, he wouldn't be in a Toyota at all next year, period. But now 2311's on the table. Does that mean Kurt isn't coming back at all? I hope he does. I really do. I would hate to see his career end and he goes into retirement on a concussion injury. That would really be a terrible way for Kurt Busch to go out. But, you know, maybe that's going to be what it's going to be. I don't know. The colleague racing side is interesting. Colleague Racing has not made an announcement yet for their full-time driver lineup for 2023. And, oh, by the way, Justin Haley kind of cryptically slipped in last week at Daytona that he said, quote, I'm racing for my life here. And that kind of implies that maybe Justin Haley's future colleague is not very secure. He has not performed – he's had a couple of good moments here and there, but he's not performed particularly well in that number 31 car for Colleague Racing this year in the Cup Series. So maybe Justin Haley is on his way out and Kyle Busch is in the 31 car for Colleague Racing next year. I don't know. Richard Childress Racing officially had no comment when questioned about it this weekend at Darlington, and I don't know where Kyle Busch would end up at. They could let Tyler Reddick go a year early. He's still on contract with Richard Childress for the 2023 season. He's not moving to 2311 until 2024. So does Richard Childress let Tyler Reddick go early to take Kyle Busch and put him in the 8 car, or do they try and stand up a third team? Bring back the 29 or whatever that they would do to stand up a third team. I don't know that Richard Childress Racing currently has the resources to do that. The other Richard Childress affiliated team, namely Petty GMS, well, the 43, I'm pretty sure, well, Eric Jones already signed for the 43. He's not going anywhere, especially after just winning the Southern 500 this past weekend. And Noah Gregson has already signed, and I'm assuming that ink is dry. Noah Gregson's going to be driving the 42 next year, and there's no way Petty GMS expands to a three-car team. So it's real interesting to see where this goes. It's kind of like one of those Wheel of Fortune spinning wheels where you just kind of spin it and see where the pointer lands, because I don't know.
Well, I think there's plenty of crow to go around. I think all of us were pretty much saying that we thought he was going to stay with Joe Gibbs Racing, and then all of that changed. And, you know, we realized that that was not going to happen. And you're right, the top three organizations that I've seen are 2311, Colleague Racing, and RCR. I've also seen HMS as a possibility, moving one of their drivers over to RCR. But I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know that Kyle Busch is interested not just in himself having a driver's seat for the 2023 season and beyond. He is concerned about how his organization, Kyle Busch Motorsports, is going to fit into the equation. And so, you know, when you look at that, there's a lot of things that can happen. None of these teams right now, maybe RCR to a small degree, have an investment in the Camping World Truck Series where KBM primarily resides. Maybe KBM is going to move to an Xfinity Series organization next year. Maybe. There's just so many maybes that can play into this equation that it makes it almost impossible to really figure out where that spinner is going to stop when all is said and done. I tend to agree with Jay. I think it is already said and done. It's just that they're probably having fun watching all of us try to figure it out until they can make the announcement. But the reason the announcement hasn't been made yet is probably because there are some other dominoes that have to fall before an announcement can be made. So I tend to think that this is already a done deal. It's just that the rest of us don't really know what it is yet. And so we're having fun kind of wondering where that spinner is going to stop. But there are just so many maybes, it's hard to make that prediction unless you got a crystal ball. Tommy, you got a crystal ball over at your house?
No, but I have my hopes up that he's going to RCR. So, like y'all are saying, there's so many possibilities here, but I thought about this last week before I went on the show, and I was waiting to see if a rumor would pop up on Twitter, and it did, and I saw it today. So, one that y'all did not say was Hendrick. And what everybody is thinking is well, Hendrick is pretty well set. Well, what I saw on Twitter today, and it's Twitter, so take it for what it is, it said that it was in between two teams and then two other teams. Two teams that are still fighting are Richard Childress and 23XI. The odd men out, but we're still in the running, were Colleague and Hendrick. And then it said in parentheses that Hendrick was willing to move on from Bowman or Byron to get Kyle Busch. I was like, wow. Because, I mean, I already figured, you know, Elliott and Larson were locks. So I pretty much knew it would be between Byron and Bowman. And I would think they would go with Bowman because I've heard Rick Hendrick speak about Byron over the past 2 years. And I feel like Byron would be safe. And he is in the 24th arcade. And Bowman's losing his crew chief. So I was thinking, you know, Kyle Busch, Ally, 48 car, get a new crew chief. Never say never. And I mean, they swooped in and they got Kyle Larson. I guess Rick Hendrick is trying to just build the all dream team of NASCAR where he's got Elliott, Busch, Larson, and Byron. I mean, who else can he snag? Is he going to go five car? But anyway, I want RCR because people aren't going to like my opinion here probably, but let's go ahead and say Busch does go to RCR next year. I think they go ahead and move Tyler Reddick to 23XI, put him in the 45 car, let Bubba be in the 23 car, go ahead and put Ty Gibbs in the 18 to round out the lineup with Hamlin, Truex, and Bell. And then RCR has Austin Dillon. He can stay in the 3 car if he wants to, but I would prefer to see him switch to the 8 or the 31 car or something. And let's put Kyle Busch in that 3 car. Let's paint it black again, and let's let Kyle Busch move people out of the way like the Intimidator did. That would be amazing.
Oh,
and then I know that people don't like that, but, I mean, his nickname is Rowdy. The 51 car, Days of Thunder, the driver was Rowdy. The car was black. We need to put Kyle Busch in a black number 3 car and let him go.
All right, Jay, what are your thoughts about that? Are you on mute, buddy?
I was still on mute. I was trying to make sure I didn't. There are a couple there that if I got to eat crow down the road, so be it. I know you can never say never, but HMS, I saw some of the scenarios with that, and yeah, there are some pieces you could connect to make that happen, but I don't see it happening. I think that one was somebody of just saying, hey, this is the most outrageous possibility. I know Kyle has talked about his history after he left Hendrick, and that, you know, that was partly on him, and that, you know, he burned that bridge. I don't know if it's been repaired, rebuilt, but going to RCR, there's a couple things here. One that got discussed of if Joe Gibbsa can't find sponsorship, a clearly top powerhouse team running for championships, if they can't find sponsorship to pay Kyle, how is it another team? And I know there's improvement. We've seen Richard Childress Racing improve. They have two drivers in the playoffs at this point. They're on the uprise. But where are they coming with then from sponsorship that's going to pay Kyle if Joe Gibbs Racing can't get it? So, and I think Toyota has a big chip in this. Sharon brought this up again before I could. That truck series, Kyle talked about it. You know, his organization now, you mentioned the possibility of maybe moving to the Xfinity Series, and that's an interesting thought. Other than Kyle has said he was no longer running Xfinity when he had his 100, and he runs his maximum number, whether it be 7 or whatever, each year in order to provide the sponsorship because they put a lot on Kyle and then whoever else he puts in the team for the rest of the year. So that's a huge factor, and I would think Toyota – as we've seen that KBM Motorsports in the truck series with Toyota has been dominant for years. Whether they win the championship, that's one where we've seen them win the owner's championship but not the driver's championship, really would come into play. So I'm still not real sure. There's a lot of things you can speculate on. I can shoot down Mike's thought there. He said something about GMS. Eric Jones isn't going anywhere. He just won the Southern 500. I'm pretty sure Reddick won a race and then announced he was leaving, so it happened.
Okay, Mike, do you have a favorite destination?
So I've got a radical theory here, and this is just a theory. It's only speculation. But if you pay attention to Kyle Busch when they interview him the past couple weeks or so, he gets this little smirk on his face, like he's got something up his sleeve. And I'm almost thinking maybe it's going to be like a Brad Keselowski kind of move where it's not just he's going to go drive somebody else's car. I think he's going to go and make a radical move that's going to change a whole lot of things. And every driver loves trophies. Eric Jones just got a hat from Richard Petty for winning the Southern 500, which is an awesome trophy. And you know who else likes trophies? Matt Colling. And Matt Colling makes no secret of the fact that he's in racing to go get trophies. And who gets them? Kyle Busch. I think, this is my theory, I think Kyle Busch takes an ownership stake in Colleague Racing, kind of like Brad Keselowski did at Roush Fenway. And what does that do? Well, it gives Kyle Busch a ride in the Cup Series, obviously driving for Matt Colleague, but it also gives Matt Colleague a turnkey truck series championship contending four trucks to go win more trophies with that's going to be associated with Kyle Busch or Kyle Busch Colleague Racing, whatever they would call it. And, oh, by the way, Colleague still has an Xfinity operation, and now Colleague has a potential championship-contending cup operation. If I was a betting man, and if I was going to make an earth-shattering kind of move if I was Kyle Busch, that might be something I would look at.
I'm getting scared. You and I are agreeing way too much, Mike.
We can talk about NASCAR's PR department some more if you want.
But I got to tell you, you took the words right out of my mouth. Colleague is where I think is the most likely place for Kyle Busch to land, and it's because of his KBM team. I don't see him taking an ownership stake at RCR. That's going to be the Dillon family that's going to be taking any kind of stake in ownership at RCR. HMS, the bridge has already been burnt there. 23XI. Or 2311, I think if that were going to happen, it certainly is still a possibility, but I still think if that were going to happen, Joe Gibbs Racing and everybody associated with Toyota would not have said it's pretty much dead. So I don't think 23XI is on the table, although people are saying it is. So that leaves us with Colleague. And for all the reasons that Mike said, Colleague would love to have those four teams of Kyle Busch Motorsports in the truck series. And I don't think he would be opposed to having a co-owner join him, especially a big name driver like Kyle Busch. The only problem that I might see there, and I don't know what the relationship is or how this might evolve, is Kyle Busch is not always the easiest person to get along with. And I think the interesting thing with that scenario would be Matt Colley and Kyle Busch and how they might get along together as co-owners, because Kyle Busch is a very opinionated guy and not always the easiest person to get along with. Matt Colley, on the other hand, seems to be a wonderful guy. And actually, Matt Colley might be the perfect person for Kyle Busch to be with, because there might be some things that Kyle Busch can, I don't know if he's still in a learning mode or not, but that Kyle Busch could learn from Matt Colley on how to develop a race team and build that camaraderie, because the camaraderie at Colley Racing is fantastic. And I think Matt Colley has a lot to do with that. So I think that there could be some really good things that could happen with a matchup with Kyle Busch and Matt Colley and Colley Racing and a co-ownership there and picking up that Truck Series team, Kyle Busch Motorsports. So to me, that seems like the most logical place. And I think Kyle Busch might be attracted to the idea of learning from Matt Colley on how to build that camaraderie and that teamwork atmosphere. So I think that could happen at Colley Racing. Just my thoughts. Tommy?
Yeah, I saw the calling thing, too, about how he was possibly offered ownership in that, like Kozlowski. Like we're all saying, you know, RCR seems like a destination. Returning to Toyota seems like a destination. Going to Colley seems like a destination. You know, I don't see Hendrick happening either, because they've got four great guys already in Elliott, Marson, Byron, and Bowman. But maybe the bridge was burned, but, you know, Rick Hendrick still went out and got Kyle Larson, took him away from Tony Stewart. It looks like Tony Stewart lost out on Kyle Busch again, so maybe Hendrick does bring him back. But, you know, the thing about Colley is this. Yes, Kyle Busch gets to move his four trucks, and Colley gets his truck team. They keep the Xfinity Series team, and they go across all three series. That would be awesome. But what do they do? Do they have do they keep Justin Haley in the 31 car? Does that become Kyle Busch? What about the car that, because in my opinion, you know, I know AJ wants to do the Xfinity Series because he's winning in that. But when he is in the Cup car and they go to road courses, he's competitive, and they go to like seven road courses a year now. I don't see why they don't pull up Allmendinger in that 16 car and let him run full-time next year with Justin Haley. So maybe they go three car. I don't know. I'm just, you know, that's an option too. But also with Colley, besides that the road courses and super speedways, I still think that they have a long ways to go with their equipment and team building. However, if Kyle Busch went to RCR, I mean, look at Tyler Reddick. You know, he's competing for a championship. And Austin Dillon's in the playoffs, too. But in my opinion, he's going to be one of the first guys to get eliminated. I'm sorry. But Kyle Busch could go to RCR, and they're already competitive, and he could be competing for championships. And he gets to drive for a legendary owner. And, you know, maybe he gets a great number, the 3 car, the 29 car, the 30 car. I mean, who knows? But or the 8 car, which would be ironic since Junior and Busch had beef in the early or the late 2000s. So it'd be ironic for him to drive the 8 car. So I can see where fans wouldn't like it. I'm not saying that I would like it, because I'm not a big Kyle Busch fan. But the guy is good, and he does have some great interviews, even though his sassiness can be too much to me sometimes. I prefer Harvick's sassiness over Busch's sassiness. But I still Kyle Busch is still important to the sport, and him going to RCR or colleague and making a championship team would be awesome.
Okay, well, round and round the spinner goes, and where it stops, Kyle Busch knows. So we'll have to wait and see. You know, it's possible that they're waiting for, you know, whoever he's replacing to be able to find another ride and be able to make that announcement before they announce Kyle Busch in that spot. So just an additional thought there. Jay, you get to bring up our next hot topic. And actually, Jay, why don't you go ahead and give an update on our fantasy group?
All right.
Yes, please.
Yeah. You aren't winning yet, Mike. You're just doing better. For the truck series, they got two races into their playoffs, so those big points are still available here. Andy's got the lead at 100 points, 92 for Owen, Mike at 90 in third, Tommy at 87, Sam 79, Brian 76, Sharon, you're at 74, but you're ahead of me and James. James at 71, and I'm at 68. I am not having a good truck year at all. On the Xfinity side, Andy at the top here as well at 120, but Brian right with him at 115. James making the surge, 104. I'm at 97. Sam, 94. Mike, 93. Tommy, 89. And Owen and Sharon at 87 tied there. The Truck Series. The Cup Series. Brian's got control of this one at 156, but we're into the playoff, double points. Mike come up to 142. James is 141. Sharon, 140. I'm a little behind there at 136. Owen, 131. Sam, 127. And Andy and Tommy tied at 120. So the overall, if you heard the names at the top, it's Brian, 347. Andy, 340. Mike now up to third, 325, James, 316, Owen, 310, me and Sharon neck and neck there, 301, Sam at 300, and Tommy, 296. So, yeah, there were some changes, definitely some points made up this weekend.
I guess so. But congratulations to everybody as we continue down this road to the season finales in all three series. Okay, Jay, do you have a hot topic for us?
Well, the schedule, I know I saw where they're expecting that again shortly. You know, there's always the case that they don't want to interrupt or take attention away from the playoffs and that getting going, so maybe holding off for that reason. Looks like maybe the All-Star race is the only one still really being discussed and slotted as far as overall. I know we're going to see some changes, the Chicago race, and how that all lays out, but we expect the schedule for all three series here, again, I say shortly, within a month or so, I think.
Okay. Next on the list here is Mike.
Yeah, I think, referencing a Bob Pocker's tweet talking about how the schedule is not quite done, but pretty close. We know some things for it. For example, we know Bristol's still going to have two dates, one with dirt in the spring and then the traditional concrete race in the fall. Talladega's already announced that they will be keeping their spring and their fall races. We know about the loss of Road America in exchange for the Chicago street race. Other pieces that I've heard rumors about, rumor that Kansas or Richmond or both may lose a date. No idea where that other date might go to, whether we will see a new track added to the schedule or a track that currently only has one date get a second date. No idea there, but I have heard Richmond and Kansas in the talks of potentially losing a date for next season. But, again, that's just rumor. Other than that, interested to see where they go. They've made a couple pretty radical changes here over the past few years. Obviously, putting a Chicago street race in the schedule that we know is coming next year is already a radical change that they're going to make for 2023. So I'm really interested to see what else they add.
Okay, Tommy?
Yeah, me too. I'm excited to see what else they add. I was thinking along those lines too. Like, we already know Road America's not going to be back because they sacrificed that for the road course. I did not hear that they were going to consider getting rid of Richmond and Kansas because they have 2 days. However, I'm definitely for that. I'm okay with Richmond losing a day, and I'm okay with Kansas losing a day. Another track that I think could lose a day that maybe two races that a year is Phoenix. What other track deserves two races? They've rotated the schedule a lot over the past 2 years, like Mike is saying, too, and I like that, too. But whatever they do, let's not give Texas an extra day. I'm sorry. I have to bring it up. I feel like I have to bring it up every podcast. Just kidding. I'm wondering if the Truck or Xfinity Series will add North Wilkesboro. I don't think they will because I think they're going to repave it, but there has been talkings that they don't want to repave the track. Maybe that's just fan gripes and they're going to do it anyway, but it would be cool to see them add it back onto the schedule for the Truck or Xfinity Series. I really don't know who would get the other dates for Richmond and Kansas if they get rid of those two. There's a lot of options, and, I definitely say that Darlington has earned it to have two races a year, which, in my opinion, it never should have lost one of the race, but let's not change that. Keep those. Keep Talladega. Keep Daytona. Keep Bristol. Keep Martinsville. Atlanta, I think, deserves two nails because it's basically a super speedway. Maybe add another road course, as crazy as that sounds, or add another short track. I think that's the only two things that I would add another road course, and I would add another short track.
Okay. I, too, am very interested in hearing about the schedule for the 2023 season. The source, Bob Pockris, says the All-Star site does appear to be the one thing that NASCAR is still discussing and trying to finalize. I'm curious to know where that site's going to be. What site do you think they've chosen for that All-Star race? Apparently, probably not Texas Motor Speedway. There's been a lot of complaints about it being at Texas Motor Speedway, so I'm looking for them to be changing that location for the next season. But we'll have to wait and see what happens. And when that comes out. He said he would expect it in the next couple of weeks, but he also says I would have said that a month ago. So I think once they get this All-Star thing straightened out, we will see the schedule for the next season. And I like you guys. I can't wait to see what kind of changes are on there, if there's any tracks that lose a date, any new tracks that we haven't seen before on the schedule. I think it's all going to be very, very interesting. Jay, your thoughts?
Well, I know we're coming short on time here, so I'll make this quick. I'm looking forward to the release with anticipation. I expect there's going to be some things I maybe don't like. Already known the Chicago Street Race. I don't think that was especially taking it from Road America, but I trust in NASCAR, and we've seen, like somebody else mentioned there, they're willing to make some bold moves. I hadn't heard Richmond or Kansas deals. I would have to see what they do with it, because that I don't see as a good move. But I'm also open to seeing maybe North Wilkesboro, as Tommy mentioned, Iowa Speedway. Those are ones I would like to see. We'll see what NASCAR does. But I'm sure I'll have an opinion on it when it gets released, whenever it does here, and we will have that hot topic discussion. The one you mentioned there, the All-Star race, and I got no idea other than it probably isn't going to go back to Texas, as Sharon mentioned. A lot of fans, Tommy, have made several complaints, multiple by Tommy. So you're right, and I can't argue with that. Well, yeah. No, Mike might have got outvoiced on that one by Tommy. Tommy's been very – and like I said, I'm one, accept it for what it is. It can be better. I think it is time for it to move from Texas. I would have to agree. As I've always said, I'd like to see it go somewhere else every year. Again, there's a lot that goes into that, logistics, marketing, and everything else. Understand, and that's why I try not to be too critical of any schedule changes they make. I'm not the one that has to pay for it and cover it and make it happen. So, but like I said, I do anticipate there may be being some dislike to it when it does come out, but I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, Mike.
Yeah, again, I'll try and keep this quick as well. If we lose a Kansas or a Richmond date, I'm not going to be particularly heartbroken. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out if either one of those lose a date or if another track loses their second race date in favor of some other ones. Tracks I would like to see added, well, let's hit the tracks I don't think are going to be on there. One, I don't think North Wilkesboro is going to be on there. And two, another one that's gotten a lot of talk, I don't think the Nashville Fairgrounds is going to be on there. They may eventually make it onto the schedule in future seasons, but I don't think either one of those facilities are ready yet to host a NASCAR Cup Series race. Hopefully in the future that changes and we do see racing at both Nashville Fairgrounds and North Wilkesboro, but I don't think that's going to happen in 2023. Now, as far as the tracks I'd like to see added to the schedule, Jay mentioned Iowa Speedway. I think that'd be a great addition to the schedule, especially if Richmond were to lose a date. I think substituting Iowa Speedway for Richmond would be a great trade-off. They're similar tracks, but they race very differently, and I think putting a Cup Series date there and removing one from Richmond, I think, would be a great trade up. Another change I'd like to see, and this is going to kind of sound weird because I'm very critical of this race in the past, bring it back to the Indianapolis Oval. And what I think if they want to do something radical, really show off what they've done with the Gen 7 car. Do a doubleheader weekend at Indianapolis. Day one, the road course. Day two, the oval. Show off how this Gen 7 car is able to be converted from a speedway car into a road course car and be capable of both events in one weekend. I think that'd be a great opportunity for NASCAR to showcase their car in addition to their drivers racing on two very different types of racetracks in one weekend.
Okay, Tommy?
Yeah, I agree with y'all. Just for the record, too, and for just to defend myself, I wasn't the only one that hated on Texas. I think Andy and Mike hated on it, too. So, I mean, I feel like I have seen some good races at Texas, but for the most part, that track's just not that good to me. That's my opinion. I did not want the All-Star race there. I liked it at Bristol with the lights. And that was just a great short track in Brahma. That's a great spot. Charlotte's great because it's the home track. I'd love to see it at Daytona or Talladega. I think in a perfect world, or maybe in my perfect world, the Bud Shootout goes back to Daytona on the oval, not the road course. And the All-Star race is the LA Clash now at the Coliseum. Now, that would be my perfect world, or, you know, at Charlotte. And, I've never seen a race at Iowa, not that I know of, so I would be cool to see that track get included. And I'm all for the Indy Oval being back, too. I think the road course did have two exciting races these past couple of years, but I also feel like the race could have been a lot better because there was crashes at the end that kind of just derailed the whole race and the way it went. But, you know, the Oval didn't have a good race in a long time, in my opinion. But the Oval is the classic. They should bring it back.
Okay, I'll make mine the quickest. I agree with all of y'all. So, Jay, you get the final word.
As with several of the topics we've had, we'll see what happens and then discuss it. And Mike and I will argue about it.
Okay, with that, let's go ahead and do our roundtable. Mike, we'll start with you.
Sure, it's Mike underscore Orzel on Twitter, Mike double underscore O on Reddit. Follow me for all exciting news, opinions, hot takes, cold takes, whatever takes you want to look out for, and that's all I got.
Okay, Tommy.
At Cincinnati 5Fan on Twitter, give me a follow. Check out my diecast and posting a day's date with them. Still got a ton of them that I want y'all to see.
Okay, Jay.
You can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, Mopar MJ8 on Twitter Twitter and Instagram. As I mentioned, switching from Tennessee for the Murray County Fair over to Kentucky for the Ultimate Street Stock Challenge Series this weekend. So may or may not be on Thursday. And hopefully, Jackson Motor Speedway, Mike, it's your
Capital City Raceway.
Hopefully they are out from under the water and can get racing in this weekend. I won't be able to be back there until the 17th, but hopefully I'll be able to at least call in for Hot Topics on Thursday as Sal picks up the preview show for me.
Okay. Yes, we will be back here on Thursday night for our weekend preview of Kansas Motor Speedway or Kansas Speedway. Definitely looking forward to that. Sal's going to be the co-host Monday night, and hopefully we'll have Jay back for Hot Topics. Also, a big thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in. We really appreciate all of you. And to our Fan for Racing crew, Sal Segala, Jay Huseman, Mike Orzel, and Tommy Kraft. You guys always make this a lot of fun, and I look forward to doing it again on Thursday night. So with that, I think we're ready to call it a night, guys.
Night, everybody.
Night.